waiting for the music to start.
Star 6 and a 1 to get in the queue.
Kind of froze up on the music. Let me just hold the recording off for a minute. Nothing's working on my end. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. We'll just start off with a voice. I can't get no music going, so we'll take it from there. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March, I think it's the 12th, isn't it? 12th.
Yes.
I think it is the 12th. Yeah. March 12th. That last week's written down here. March 12th. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for that call, by the way, is that the right numbers? Did I make that correction?
That I do not know. I don't have them up right now.
Okay, I'll have to check that. This may be the wrong numbers, but it may be. But anyway, if your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. Now, again, I'm not sure whether those numbers are correct, but you can go to NLA, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, click on the Monday weekly tab. Well, I think it just says weekly call. Click on that, top left-hand side, and all of the information to get to us can be found there. Meanwhile, I'll check to see if this information is correct. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew 25. We're going to pick up where we left off. I believe we left off in verse 30, Matthew 25, verse 31, and we'll read to the end of the chapter, which I think is verse 46. So, Matthew 25, pick it up in verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd separates his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you... Wondering if we should just... Well, I'm going to pick up with the scripture reading. I'm not sure what happened there with the recording stopping, but we'll pick back up on the scripture reading. Just for a timestamp, just in case, today is March 12, 2018. We're reading out of Matthew chapter 25, picking up back up in verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left hand. Then shall the king say unto them on the right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. For I was a hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee a drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Truly I say unto you, insomuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, unto everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, and a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Truly I say unto thee, insomuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto eternal life. Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46. All right. As everybody, I don't know about the people listening on the recording, but there was a problem with the recorder, and we kind of went off. I don't know where it picked it up, so we picked up where we could. Okay, tonight's topic, very particularly, I want to cover first and foremost. We spoke about this in a few different places. We spoke in the past. People have brought this up. People think that there's what's called an Article 1 court. No such animal as an Article 1 court. I know when I heard about this, I went seeking through the Constitution, trying to figure out where it is that they get it, and I found it, and I want to read it to you. And this is a real, this is going to be a real simple study. I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure it out. So we're just going to lay it out and show you exactly how these people came up with what they claim is an Article I court, which allowed Congress to create any kind of a court they want to do anything they want. They don't have that power. They don't have that that authority. Okay, let's first look at the power, the judicial power. And this is the judicial power. It cannot go beyond this. No court can be created by the federal government that goes beyond this power. Right here. The judicial power of the United States shall, and this is Article 3, Section 1. Anybody wants to follow along? Article 3, Section 1. If you want a copy of the Constitution, you can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the educational tab, and I'm not sure exactly. I think there should be right underneath that. Founding Documents is the first list. Highlight that. Come over to the Founding Documents. You go to a page where you can open up the Constitution. So Article 3, Judicial Power, Section 1, the judicial powers of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, just one, the United States Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain or establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and the inferior courts, that's the key, the Supreme and the inferior courts, shall hold their office during good behavior. That includes the people sitting on the United States Supreme Court. If they're in bad behavior, we need to get rid of them. And let me tell you, a lot of them have been bad behavior over the time that I've been paying attention. There's judges up there that are outright Marxists. And I think, once we get into power, we're going to press Congress to do their job. They need to impeach these judges and get rid of them, can them, get out of there. They're not going to uphold the Constitution. They need to be getting out of there. And Congress needs to be doing that job. And if Congress won't do it, we the people will do it. And we'll do that as unified across the nation, through the grand jury. That's what we'll do it through. But, of course, before we can do anything and before we can really press Congress to do the right thing, swamp, I think, has to be finished drained and get rid of all the garbage that we find in the bottom of that swamp and clean it out and plant some good plants, I guess, but we the people need to fill that void, and we need to pour into the courts and take control of the judiciary process as we planned and according to National Liberty Alliance's plan. We can simply do that. It's a matter of the people having a desire and a want to do that. Okay, so they serve as they're in good behavior. In Section 2, it says, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Let me read that again. Judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity, period. So there's only two types of courts, one of law and one of equity. Law is both of them are common law courts. They must be common law courts. One's run under American jurisprudence, and the other one will run under... Goodness, I don't know what someone's calling me now. But anyway, one that runs one under equity is run under American jurisprudence, and the other one is run by trial juries. Okay, and American jurisprudence, of course, the judge makes a decision. We've agreed. You can agree to that or disagree. You don't have the judge have a decision in your case if you don't want him. You call for a trial by jury, and so in either case, both are common law courts. So the judicial power shall extend to all cases of law and equity, and a judge under the jurisprudence in respect of the natural rights. Okay. Arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. So it goes on. So it deals with all the laws, this court, that under the Constitution that is made, and any treaties. So it deals with any kind of a problems that affect an ambassador, to all cases that affect admiralty law or maritime law. Of course, that's the law of the sea, you know, not the law of the land. And there are admiralty courts and there are maritime jurisdictions. And so maritime jurisdictions, you know, get about the sea. To controversies to which the United States shall be a party. To controversies between two or more states. Between a state and a citizen of another state. Between citizens of a different state. Between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign state citizens or subjects. Now, a little bit of that has been changed. I think it was by the 11th Amendment. I'm not sure exactly which one, but it was very early on. The Founding Fathers changed that pretty quickly, within a couple of years. I can only guess. I got some good ideas on why, but that's not important. Okay. Now, before we read the section in Article 1 where these people point to and nobody seems to go look to see what they're talking about, I first want to describe what a tribunal is. Okay. You know, a tribunal, ultimately, the jury, the grand jury is a tribunal, and that's made of 25-plus people. In our case, 25 plus. In a trial jury, of course, it's 12 plus a couple of spare wheels. In other words, two extra people in case someone gets sick or dies or something and they can't continue. There's, I believe it's two people that they usually put on. So you have the 12 plus two is 14, but only 12 will decide. So those two things are tribunals. In Black's Law, 4th edition, it says, the seat of a judge, so it could be an individual judge who is a tribunal, one single judge. The place where he administers justice, so a tribunal also identifies with a court, the place where he administrates justice. The whole body of judges who compose a jurisdiction, okay. And so that could be an appeal court, an appellate court, where you have three or four or more judges that actually sit where more than one is involved, usually, again, appeals courts. A judicial court. Again, tribunal is a judicial court. The jurisdiction which the judge exercises. Okay, again, that's what a tribunal is. And this is found, they make a reference to a case, Foster versus Worcester. So you can look that case up. But anyway, that's Black's Law 4th on the meaning of a tribunal. So bear in mind, tribunal identifies usually in this case of the Constitution with a judge, a single judge, and or a court to be risen up and created. We have, I forget the number. Is it 92 federal districts? Do you remember, Jan? I think that's what it is. I think it's
94.
94? Okay, yeah, 94. That rings a better bell. That too didn't ring a good bell to me. Okay, 94, federal districts. So those federal districts were created by Congress. Now, Congress has to be given the authority to create that. This kind of is dealing with the judiciary in Article 3 we've been reading, and it refers back to the fact that Congress has the power to create these things. And we read that. I'm going to read it again. It's in Section 1, the powers of the United, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So that means that they're sovereign. We've given them the power and the authority to ordain and establish. That's where part of the powers that they have, sovereignty they have there. That's what's called a clipped sovereignty. And by the way, in order not to confuse people, I'm going to be a little more clear that we, the people, are sovereign, but our sovereign is clipped also because we are held under the law of God, under the laws of nature and nature's God. So our sovereign is also clipped. The only true sovereign in the entire creation is God himself. But in any event, now let's look at the place where these people point to, because I went looking everywhere, and I did find some stuff in you know, one verse in the Constitution, which I thought they were probably referring to, because I couldn't find anything else in Article 1, anything. And I started searching the internet, and I did find some places where these people talk about these special courts, and they point to this in Article 1, Section 8. We should all be familiar with this. This is the power and the authority of Congress. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. So it's in Clause 9 you'll find. Listen to the wording, very specific. The Congress shall have the power to constitute tribunals, that's a judge or a court, tribunals, okay, inferior to the Supreme Court. Now, let's take that language back to what we read there in Article 1. It talks about the Supreme Court and in such inferior courts, shall, as established, ordained and established by Congress, as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So let's go back and I'll read it again. This is clause line. It's a very short sentence. In Article 1, Section 8, Congress shall have power to constitute tribunals, that's judges and courts, inferior to the Supreme Court, that's referring back to the powers. Remember, there is given no judicial power to any court outside of the court we just read in Article 3 under judicial powers. So anything they say about these courts, that they have some kind of a power or authority to create and has some kind of authority over you, is not true, because both of these clauses deny that. They don't empower that. But, you know, they take advantage of the fact that we're dumb, that we don't know these things. We're not reading the Constitution. We're not studying. Even lawyers aren't looking and reading at it because, you know, they don't teach them in school usually. They just teach them about the Constitution, but they don't teach the Constitution. And they interpret it the way they want to interpret. They say, look, you know, the lawyer, at least the lawyer that taught us, you know, look, you know, all you need to do is use statutes. You don't have to go into that constitutional stuff. That's too difficult for all of us. Let's go to the interpretation of that. It's clearly laid out. It's in the statutes and codes and so on. Of course, that's a lie from hell. We should throw all those things out with the exception of the lawful ones. And at some point, that's one of the things we need to get to. We will get to that eventually, but we can't do that now. That's later on work, because we have to get into the courts first and get some power and authority back to the people. Okay, so that's it. There's not much to it. And again, I'm just going to repeat. It's Article 3, Section 1 and 2, and then Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. And that's all there is to it. You can't find an article. There's no such animal that doesn't exist. There is no Article 1 court. Okay. Let's see where we get to from here. New York Safe Act lawsuits. I'm going to send an email out. I've been wanting to do it all on the weekend. I never got around to it. But I got to send an email out. We're going to bring this to a finale. We're looking to file within the next week or two at the most, I think I could say. And so we'll do that filing. I'm going to send out an email notice, probably one more reminder in about a week. And then the day before we're filing or preparing to file. Excuse me. The day before, we'll send out the final notice. So anybody that wants to get into the New York State lawsuit, you still can do that. Just go up to the page. I believe it's under news. And it's the third one down, New York Safe Act lawsuit. And anybody who signs up, the wherefore clause is going to go for $50,000 in damage for each of the people who have signed up on this. But the wherefore clause, as far as the law is concerned, is on a federal level, particularly focused in New York, but it would be everywhere, really, to get rid of gun laws. Ultimately, as far as restrictions, anything that restricts our ability to exercise our Second Amendment rights. So anything that infringes upon that needs to go. And that's what our court case is going to be all about. There's a YouTube out there. I don't know where I'm going to put it. Jen, do you want to send an email out, to everybody, maybe tonight or tomorrow, just on that YouTube? I haven't watched it all the way through. I'm at 27 or 47. Have you listened all the way through?
I'm up to an hour and 25 minutes. I got 20 to go, but it's good.
Okay. All right. Why don't you just send a little email out that this is something, this is what's going to give us the critical mass we're looking for, if people will jump on this, and you're one of our members, so please jump on this. You probably listen and watch YouTubes all the time. Go out on YouTube and find some people who report on good news. You know, there's quite a few different groups out there that report on good news. You know, David Zuckerblick channel is really good. He's got a pretty good listenership, and I listen to him as much as I can. He reports probably every day. I try to find his stuff and listen in. Screen Hoopla, goodness, I think they do a couple a day sometime. Most of their stuff is short, but very informative. But anyway, you know, they've got thousands of people following both of these guys. Also, Lionel Nation is pretty good. Sometimes he's long-winded, but he's funny. He's got good information. And if you don't mind the long-windedness until he gets to the information, that's fine. But he's a funny guy. I like to watch him because he's funny. But great information, right on point, so on. There's the SGT report, okay? Again, I find that pretty good. And there's numerous others. I just don't have my fingertips that I kind of have I subscribe to them, and they send me this on a daily basis. I try to watch as much as I can because they really give me a lot of good stuff. And when I find something really, really good, I post it up on our page. If you go under news and just click on news on National Liberty Alliance, okay, you will find, let me double check, you don't have to click on today's news, but you can. Yeah, if you click on news on the blue bar, just click on that button, you'll find a lot of YouTube video there. These are YouTube videos that I thought were so important that we should post them, so I post them. I don't post a lot here. I post maybe 4 to 7 videos a week, at most, 7, maybe sometimes less than 4, but probably somewhere around there. I don't know. So anything I find that really I think everybody should be watching or seeing, I post it there. But there is a lot more that probably everybody should be seeing, and I don't post. You know, we can only post so much, and people can only watch so much. Okay, so this YouTube that Jen is going to send out, somebody picked up. Now, he doesn't have a huge listenership, but he's got a somewhat of a listenership. And hopefully someone else is going to pick up on this, and someone else, and someone else. And we're going to get into the big guys, the guys that I just mentioned, and there are bigger guys than that. But these guys I really like. They seem to be very professional, very focused, believable, and don't exaggerate. You know, that Corsi guy just started one. I'm trying to think of his first name. He's very professional, does a lot of Q reports, and he's picked up a huge listenership real quick. There's also a kid out there, and I forget his name, too. I listen to him. But he's a young guy, and he's very informative. And again, he gets it out. These are the people we need to get our message to. If they would report the way that this one individual reported, that Jan's going to send the email out on the YouTube, then we will hit critical mass overnight, literally. So it's up to the people. You know, take a look at this video and get this video out, or get National Liberty Alliance out to these other individuals whose information is out there reporting on the news. They need to report what they reported. They reported on, you know, on our papers that we filed up in the court, the last papers, and they pulled their stuff originally off of PESA, I believe. They got all our filing numbers and filed when, and, you know, gives a file date. They took it very serious, and they were very excited about this. And if we can get enough people excited about this, that's critical mass. You're not going to tell the people when they're all over the place yelling, you know, what about this indictment that went up there? What about this? Why is the court sitting on this? Why isn't nobody prosecuting this? You're not going to argue against a critical mass telling them that, oh, these guys are nobody. They're not real. They're people. But yeah, they're not real. I mean, what are they going to say? We're under the auspices of the court. They can't deny us there. We filed our papers. We met and indicted far more necessary people than a normal grand jury. But we had to be extra big because we're national. We're doing national problems. We're looking at crimes, you know, people who are enemies both foreign and domestic. And subversion against the United States of America, subversion against our Constitution, subversion against we the people. But these guys were really excited. Listen to the video. Hopefully you'll get excited about it. I've listened to about 30 minutes or 27 minutes or something like that, and I was extremely excited to say, wow, okay, good. This is what we need to get done. So everybody now has a job. When you go out to YouTube, find your favorite news reporter out there, you know, one of the we the people that's really reporting on the news. You know, who we need to get to is, what's that one with the mask?
Anonymous,
yeah. That's the one, you know, someone might want to drop a note to them. You know, when you go out to these YouTubes and it's a real good news program and you don't have to necessarily put your message in the text chat there because they may miss it there. I mean, you could drop it there. But click on, I think if you click on the name, I'll have to find out exactly how you do this, but if you click on something, on their name or something, or their picture or something, you can go right to their page. And on their page, you can send them an email. When you send them a message, it's sent to them in an email. You know, when I was very active on YouTube, I was getting emails from people who were viewing. I've been shut down 3 times, so, you know, but we got two YouTubes up there now, but we don't really put a lot of stuff. We try to stick, one, we stick to all of our, only our stuff that we create. Any other one, we put other stuff that we want to echo that other people have created, but just want to echo it out. And so those two are still up and running, but we're not really, really big time on YouTube. Hopefully we'll get our TV thing going soon, you know, then we'll be more popular on YouTube. We'll have a YouTube channel and everything. But anyway, you need to get out to these people, get to their page, when I take a break off of talking, I'll go look up to see if I can't find exactly how to do that. And then you can send them an email direct. Send them a copy of that video, you know, the YouTube video, and send them our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and try to get the page. It goes right directly to. I'd send them both to the front page and then say, by the way, here's a page directly to all the paperwork that was sent in, filed, with the court. Here's everything we filed. So you can do that up on National Liberty Alliance. Let's see. You come under your county grand jury and then click on docket. So the URL is nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. Okay? But you can go to the page and cut and paste it right out of the thing and give it to them. But look, this is the job of every National NLA member. Every one of us needs to do this, you know, tonight, tomorrow, whatever. We should do it every day, places. Got to get this message out. This is the perfect message. This is an extremely powerful indictment, and we name really big people, and people want to see this stuff. They really do. So, and this will give us our critical mass. This will push us if we all get out there and do this. All right, enough of that. You know, I've said this before. We need to do more. We need to sue the judiciary for true liberty. There's so many things we need to do. But again, you know, I'm just going to go back to my whining about this or whatever. We need everybody to participate and help us financially. $5 a month or more. If you got deep pockets, then come on, give us something. But most people can afford, 99% of the people can afford $5 a month or more. So 99% of our membership should be sending in $5 a month or more. If we get $5 a month or more, we can do anything we want. That's a huge amount of money to us because we're not lawyers and there's no fat paychecks here or anything like that. So we could do with that kind of money, lawsuit city. And that would push us further, more credibility, going after things and getting things done, using the courts to do it and suing them from we the people under the power and the authority of ultimately the grand jury. We could sue it from that perspective. And there's other creative ways, things we could do. But that's how I would think we would do most of the suits, if not all of them, that way. Okay. Let's see. Campaign for constitutional sheriffs hasn't been moving at all. It's up to the I've done all I could do for that. As a matter of fact, I got to call the printer up. He sent me an email about a week ago, and I just haven't been able to get back to him, and I'm not sure what to say to him, but I need to reset. He threw me an idea. He sent me a couple of booklets, and I got to make some corrections and do some things with it, get back to him and get it prepared. But we can't buy these books until, we get some money. So without money, can't do that constitutional thing. We have collected very, very little. A couple of $100 is all we've collected for the sheriff's thing. And we've launched that program quite some time ago, so it's up to you to do it. We can put it together, but it's up to the people to take it out and make it work and push it. That particular project to accomplish it is going to cost about $40,000, $50,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. And we're going to tighten up that number, but I'd be very surprised if it came underneath that. We have to print off these books. We're looking to give 20 books to each sheriff in America. That's 4,000 times, 20. And we'll have we'll have so many thousand left over, which we'll probably just sell. And great books for knowledge. We got another book, a PDF book, which I don't think we posted yet. Matter of fact, I know we didn't post it yet, but it'll be posted soon. It'll be under the educational tab. And it's going to be an education in itself. And pretty much it's a lot to do with the Sheriff's Handbook, but really focused. We changed some things around and the press is coming in and so on. And it's focused towards any elected individual. But ultimately, it's focused towards anybody who wants to learn ultimately the law, at least the basics. And so that's what you want to do. Go read that. We'll get it up soon. Okay, I think we'll move to announcements.
Okay. If you're ready, John, I just sent out a mass email to all members with the URL for the video you were just talking about. I heard back from Terry that it's out already, so anybody that wants to watch it from now on, it's in your email box. Speaking of emails, we're getting people who have emails that go to, you send them an email and it says, well, we don't know about you. You got to do this or that, get an ID or something, or we won't look at your emails. And that could be a problem because there's no way to have our email have any key or code on it that would satisfy that. If it's something that we can go into individually and type in something once, then we might be able to handle that. But similar sort of thing, I'm getting calls from people, and I call the number back, and it turns out they call on one and they want to be returned on another one, and they don't go through. And I'm getting some now, you know, the service is not available. Now, I don't know if it's been disconnected, but it's one they just called me on, sometimes minutes earlier. So we're having some very strange...
They may
strange...
have been calling from Skype. Oh. Skype does that kind of thing.
Yeah, but they have an actual number. It's not a Skype address. So
yeah,
it
but sometimes if you don't pay for your own personal Skype number and you make a phone call, you have the ability to make a phone call, but you don't have a return number. So you got to pay for that. But if you don't, then the number you call from, it just blobs some numbers that aren't working, I guess. I don't know.
If you don't pay, you don't get a Skype number. It costs you to get a Skype
number. You can, unless they changed it, you can pay to make calls, and then you can pay to have a call, a number for people to call you. It's two different things. I think it's about 60 bucks a year, if I recall. I don't remember.
Right.
For the Skype, yeah. But $30 for the calling ability and $30 for the Skype number. Now, they may have consolidated that. And maybe even done away with that program. You just have to go in and do both. I don't know.
No, there's two bills, one's 60, one's 30 a year. Yeah.
Okay, whatever they
okay.
were. I didn't think it was that much.
Yep.
Is it that much? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I have, would you like a question now or another comment for you to make?
What do you mean?
Well, you wanted me to remind you to make an announcement about we need someone to get news out to the media, and one other person we would be looking for on the call tonight might be a good place to shop for people.
Oh, yeah. We do need more help. Look, at anybody who wants to take a leadership role here, we need lots of leaders. We need leaders everywhere. There's no end to the amount of leaders we need. But on the national level leadership, you know, we need people to get more involved. We need someone to really work close with one of our people that are working the courtroom observers group. He needs a partner. And in the leadership in any of these committees, we really want to put two people in working together. So if one person is ill or has to go away for a while on vacation or whatever, and they can't keep up on things, you know, whoever they're partnershipping with can do exactly what they're doing. They can't make it to a meeting because we're going to start board meetings, and all of the leadership needs to attend that. And if everybody, there's two for every one, then there'll always be someone there to represent whatever committee or whatever leadership role they have. So, again, we're also looking for someone up on the national level. Well, again, these are all national level positions. We need someone to work with Jan a little closer. We need somebody who understands things that are going on and help to work to organize things on a national level. So, again, we need people everywhere. We need leadership on the county level. We need committees of safety started. If you're not in a committee of safety, get one started. Get to the committee of safety meetings, okay? Learn what needs to be done. The best thing to do is find someone, and you can find lots of people at Liberty, you know, your local Liberty groups. Get someone out and take a look on what we're doing with the committees of safety to find a partner. And even if it's a person that's not going to be as involved as you are, you know, you'll continue to look for more people to find that'll be active. Or maybe you don't want to be active, but you want to get it started, and you can participate doing this and looking for two active people that want to take the major roles, and maybe you'll take that position until those people take your place. But we need to get committees of safety started in every county in America. We need to take back the political process, and this is exactly how we do it. You know, committees of safety, when our founding fathers created this nation, all of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, all of the signers of the Constitution were members of the Committee of Safety. And that makes sense because they used the Committee of Safety is the tool they used to create this nation. they had in the committees of safety what's called the Committee of Correspondence. That could be one, two, or more people. And they corresponded with what's going on next door, in the colony up the road, the colony down road, the colony across the road, whatever, you know, from colony to colony. They communicated, find out what they were doing, what they found out, what's happening. And then they would bring this back to their committee and say, hey, this is what's going on in New York. This is what's going on in Jersey. And here's what's going on in Pennsylvania. Well, whatever. You know, all of these colonies communicated through the Committee of Safety. And for them, it must have been a heck of a job. Just think about it, because they had to travel by horse or carriage. And, you know, days of journey to get one place to another. So they probably had a central meeting place where they came together. Maybe district places sometimes, but central meeting places, so they all traveled to get there, got the inside skinny on what's happening in the different colonies, brought it back out to the other, their own colonies, and then acted upon the stuff accordingly. So we want to be creating that, and that's what the Committee of Safety meeting is all about, and those people coming. You know, everybody that starts a Committee of Safety, we have very detailed information on how to do this. Go up to the, nationallibertyalliance.org and just click on COS. And then you will, I think if you just click right on that first page, the COS, yes, information and contact. Now, we're going to update this page, but nevertheless, we've got a tremendous amount of information already up there. A couple of YouTube videos. We have a handbook on how to create a committee of safety, other instructional things, some videos and instructional videos, and you can download these videos, Robert's Rules of Order, flyers, and so on and so on and so on. So we got a lot of stuff. So go up there, get this information, educate, create a committee of safety, get it going. And then send your, you know, in the beginning, well, actually anybody that can come to the meetings, because it's very simple. You know, it doesn't have to be just the committee of correspondence out of your committee to come. But at least one person from your county should be coming, finding out what's going on a national level, find out the new information, new instructions on things, whatever, okay, and bring that information back down to your county, where they can discuss and decide how they can digest and use these things. So the Committee of Safety is extremely important. It is the grassroots, and at some point in time they will morph. We will teach them exactly how to morph into the committee man, and the committee man has the total control. Now, you'll have that control already as a Committee of Safety. If you're successful and able to branch out to the entire county and getting access into every single town or city in your county, and you're working with these people and supporting these people, I'm talking about the people who are elected, and getting the right people in there, you're already doing what the committee man does. And the committee man, they, you know, you don't have to go out to, you go out to them as the Committee of Safety, but as the committee man, they come to you. They know when you're open and for meetings, they'll come and they'll talk with the county, committee chairman and or some other assistant to the committee chairman, and they'll say, hey, I want to run for this office, and I'd like to come to the committee and ask for them to support me. Okay, they'll make arrangements and dates. I mean, you're not going to get that interview with these people, you know, especially if you talk about the Constitution and doing the right thing. You're not going to get in there. But we need to turn it around where anybody can come and talk with the committeeman. And so you want to run for an office, you want to run for mayor, you want to run for councilman, whatever it is you want to run for. And you go there and you talk to the committee, and the committee will interview you. And they want to find out what is your not. They should be wanting to find out. They want to train people to do. What do you know about the Constitution? What do you know about the power and the authority of your office? And what powers do you have? All kinds of questions you can ask them about the Constitution. And if you're not happy with their answers, you send them home. You know, we're not going to walk your papers. Go learn this stuff and then come back. You know, they can come back a month later, you know, as long as they came out early enough to approach the committee for support. You know, they can go out and learn this stuff, come back a month later and say, this is what I got. Then, you know, we'll set it up. But we're going to suggest very strongly that anyone who comes into the committeemen and the committeemen are going to support them, they're going to want to have them sign an oath. That's what I suggest. Committees don't have to do that, but you really should. And now you tied this guy down. He knows, he understands, it's serious. Because if you break this oath, we're going to pull you out of office. The only way you can pull an individual out of office, we could do this without the committeemen, but it's very difficult and they probably won't acknowledge or recognize you. But if the committeemen do it, it happens. You recall. Recall is the power of the people. And in order to get a recall, all you need to do is get a certain percentage. This is all in the rules and laws of the election, the election laws. In each state, they have their own election laws. But generally, a lot of this stuff is standard across the nation. You know, if the person runs for an office and was elected, and depending on how many votes were cast, a certain percentage of those votes is calculated as signatures that you need in order to pull this person out, to recall them. So depending on the level of government, the lower the office, the less the votes. So, you know, let's say you have a town election and you want to recall that person in the town. It wouldn't be that many signatures you need to recall. But all the committeemen have to do is muster a meeting, bring up the charges, the concerns of an individual, and call for a vote. And once the vote comes in, as long as you get the majority rules, then every committeeman is now committed to walk the papers for signatures to recall. Once they get that number for the recall, they deliver it over to the election committee, and they have to, within 90 days, they have to get an election going. And it's an election to recall and to go up for a new election to replace. So it's a strong, very powerful process that's not being exercised by the committeemen at all, and it should be exercised, of course, by the people who are not given their allegiance to some power above somewhere other than God, of course, but, you know, they're really doing the will of someone else. But that's one of the powers and the authorities of the committeemen. And in election time, the people, everyone running for office is going to come to see you. They want to get your vote. And they're going to talk to you. If you're sitting in that committee, they're going to talk to you and tell you how great they are. And you're either going to believe them or not, and you're going to walk their papers or not. And if you don't walk their papers, they're not getting to the office. When the smaller offices, you know, maybe something like a town councilman or something, maybe they only need 300 signatures to do that. Or maybe if they're working for an assembly district, and maybe they need 1,500 signatures, okay? I've known some people who have run for those kind of office and have gone out on their own with a few people to support them, went day after day after day and got all the signatures needed and got onto the ticket. And in some cases, some of these people got elected. But they didn't get in working through the committeemen because they couldn't get an interview. The committee chair said, no, we're not going to meet with you. They're not qualified or whatever. These are the people that should be in. But anyway, that's what a committeeman does, and you're as being a committeeman, you're only active during the election season, okay? And it's not that many meetings throughout the year, depending on where you are, how busy your county is, and so on and so forth. Most committees have a meeting once a month. You should be required. There is a certain requirement to come every 3 months or something, maybe, but if not, there should be that. But once a month. And then during the election system, you know, details, you're busy, you know, one day a week here, one day a week there during the election season. So everybody should think at some point we need to teach our children in school to get involved in the committeemen. We need to teach them about it first and many other things. But we should teach our children. It's their duty, okay? It's your duty. Can't tell them they got to do it, but it's your duty to do it. Okay, sometime in your lifetime to be elected, be an elected committeeman. The term is 2 years, okay? And people don't need to be sitting in term after term after term. Some people may want to get involved and spend a lot of time, but, you know, if there are other people who want to get in it and, you know, maybe you kind of let them get in and take your place. But in any event, everybody should be a committee man one time in their life, 2-year term, minimum amount of work, a couple of meetings here or there, that's it. And that is really also the committee men, you know, in the laws here, and it's not operating this way, but we have laws here in New York on how things are supposed to operate, you know, how the votes are to be dealt with, how the votes are to be counted. Especially go back into the older laws, which they demolished. We need to bring them back, okay, on exactly how votes are counted. And there's numerous witnesses, and the committee man is to have a representative in every single election district viewing and watching what's going on, especially at the end of the day when the votes are to be counted. They're supposed to be done in public. The boxes are supposed to be opened and physically counted. Doesn't matter, those electronic stuff. Open the boxes anyway and count them. Let's check the boxes, make sure the electronic's right. This is what we need to move the law towards. We're going to move it back to this. This is the way it used to be. And in some states, it may still be this way. And some states, they just changed the law on their own without changing the law. They just decided to do things differently. The law is still there, so we need to look at that. We need to get involved and do this thing on the committeeman thing. And committeemen, we can use the committeemen, especially during the election district, to pass out pamphlets, okay, of where they can go and get an education and how they need to get involved in their local schools and bring education back local. Let the parents decide what the children are going to be taught. Let the parents decide what they don't want their children to be taught. I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. You know, they had a rally in a local school here, and it was an anti-gun rally as far as doing something because of all those children were shot up down there. 17 children were killed. And so they made a political thing about it. You know, if you're a parent in that school, you should be outraged. Outraged. Why are my children being put into this kind of a situation to be anti-Second Amendment? Because that's what it was. So anyway, involvement. Do we have any questions?
Yes. Does a judge have to answer a writ of error? If so, within what time frame? If it is not answered, what rule can be quoted to force an answer?
Well, you do, when you do a writ of error, you do, I know Thornton teaches this, make it a show cause at the same time. You give him a writ of error with opportunity to make his point and prove that he's right. And they're not, the reason why you're sending him a writ of error usually is because they did make a decision, and when they did make the decision, either they didn't expound and clarify anything on how they got the decision, or they did and just left a lot of stuff out. If you just read their decisions, you can see what they missed and why they did this or why they did that. But in your writ of error, you need to neutralize anything that they did write to show that this is BS and this is BS. Let's get to it, you know, and overrule them. You know, writs of error should be cut and dry, clear. They should be constitutional, ultimately, laying straight out. They don't have the power, they don't have the authority, or it's not constitutional, or something of that nature, and make it clear. And put enough in there without overwhelming, and we have to be careful not to repeat ourselves, but not overwhelming, overwhelming, but not too much. You know, there comes to a point when it just becomes too much. And make it powerful. They're not going to answer the writ of error. You're going to overturn them and move on. And if they don't behave, then you have to ask them to recuse themselves. Because, look, you've been given a writ of error. You've had opportunity to respond. As far as how many days, you know what? I think the general rule is 30 days anyway. So let's just stick with 30. There may be something up there, but I'm not aware of it. So 30 days. Give them 30 days to respond. Federal courts, once you move the papers in there after the first response, it's 60 days for anybody who's elected, whatever level of election it is, they got 30 days. So if you go and sue a clerk who's an elected individual, they could have 60 days to answer in the federal courts and so on. As far as anyone who is not part of the government, they got 30 days. So if you're suing banks or other individuals outside, whatever, and they're not elected, then they must respond in 30 days. But once that gets going, the rule of thumb in the federal level is 20 days. Now, I answered, I have a federal case going. The papers were sent to me. This was already past the, you know, the initial back and forth first set of papers. After that, I answered it within the 20-day period. About 2 weeks after that, I get a letter from the judge telling me that I need to answer this paper. The paper was sent to you. You need to answer it. You didn't answer it. You got 3 days or whatever he gave. Maybe he gave me 5 or 10 days, but he only gave me a few days. And I send a paper back with the copy and the paper and the certificates. And, you know, I register everything, register certified mail, the certified papers, the signature, everything, mailed it back in. And then he sent out an apology letter to me and everyone else saying it was an error in filing or whatever, and the papers were received and blah, blah, blah. It's there. So apparently, you know, you got 20 days to respond, but it seems that they give you a little grace. Now, maybe they gave me a grace because they see me. They don't see me as a lawyer, so maybe they give me a little extra, which they should be doing anyway, you know? So I don't know how that works on them. All right. Anyway, hopefully I answered the question.
Right. I have no more questions, just a comment from Gerard. He Skyped me that he has a tooth problem, and he will not be on the call tonight.
Okay.
So you're on for the whole show.
On for the whole show. Well, when...
On show.
When we have Brent come on, I'm just going to run for 10 minutes to heat up a bite, bite to eat. I haven't had dinner yet, so, but I'll be back. But if you get some silence and you're looking for me, just keep things going a few more minutes more. But,
okay.
But I
yeah,
should be
well,
back long before that. Okay. Huh?
We'll shout loudly for you.
Shout loudly. Okay,
yeah.
So we need leadership. We need participation. We need people to help. This is a cry out for help. We need people to get involved. We need people to spread the word. You know, this indictment we did or with the big names, Hillary Clinton and a few others in there, people that are looking at this are really excited. We need to get that message out to the people who have the ability to get out to a lot of people. Now, we've tried different radio programs and different news people. We've tried Alex Jones, and they don't want to hear any of this stuff. It frightens them, I guess. But you know what? These YouTubers... They go right out. They go right for the juggler. Let's get it out to those people, because some of these people have huge followings. People that are coming to hear the news reported by people that they trust. They're getting good news from a lot of these people. Let's get the news out. The people. Reality is the way one perceives it. When people pick up this paper and they perceive we the people have an indictment, you're not going to change that mind, especially when they read it and they see how powerful it is. You see all the evidence and, you know, 600 and some odd pages of evidence we've given with this and 27 videos. You know, that's powerful. You're not going to get a movement of people holding that paper up and we win. We will have the landslide, the critical mass, and we will be in the courts in no time, and we win. Okay. I think that's all I have. Let me take a quick look. Yep, I think that's it. Brent, I saw Brent here. Is Brent in here? I saw him earlier when I was looking at the board.
I haven't seen him, but someone just sent me a comment that says, what about the Oath Keepers and the 3%ers? They might like to see this.
Absolutely.
Video as well.
Get after them. Everybody, get it out anywhere you want. Doesn't matter. Get it to the news, even if you want. Get it out. Okay, Brent's not here?
I didn't see him yet.
Okay. Brent, if you're down, lost somewhere, and in the bottom of the list, pipe in here. And until then, we'll continue. I guess we'll go right to Q&A then. I'm going to have to find a way to stuff my face with something a little bit because I'm about ready to keel over. But we'll see what we can do. Okay, we'll go to Q&A, and if Brent comes in, maybe just let me know if you see him. Okay.
Okay. It seems like Jim Bearson has a comment for tonight.
Jim,
if we
go right ahead.
Him.
Take your time. I'm going to find a devil dog or something around here.
What's his area code? 518?
518, yep.
Well, I see a Carl. I hear that dog biting.
Jim, drop a text in Jan's Skype box.
What's your phone number? Or jump in the queue and we'll pick you up.
Yeah, jump in the queue. We can scroll down and find you. I see Eric, Fred. Oh, New York Jim. There he is, 518. I'll unmute him. Jim.
Yeah.
He's at the mic.
Hello. I didn't know what more else I could do besides get in the queue.
So what we got? I'm muting myself. So take as long as at least it takes you to eat a devil dog, right?
A devil dog. Oh, you're something. All right, well, anyway, I'm up here in a great state of confusion. That's New York for all you people that already know that. So I just wanted to put down that I got John to schedule to go on Randy Yarbrough's show out there in Denver for Wednesday, March 21st. He's going on at 6 o'clock Eastern time. So, and that's a two-hour show. And he's on with Brent. So it's and I think Gerard would, if he's still not having dental work, he'll probably join him. They usually go together on that. So let me get to my email on here. Yep. So it's 5:55 Eastern is when they're going to, well, they start at 6. But so the call-in number is 1-800-606-5462. And if you just want to listen to call in from anywhere in the country, you can dial in at 877-254-7524. And it's on AmericanNewsNet.com is the website for the station. So, and I'm also going to have Jan put this in the newsletter so that we can... So you can refer to it for next Monday, because it'll be the Wednesday after next, after tomorrow, or I'm sorry, this Wednesday. So that was all, and I'm trying to, there's another one that we're going to be putting on there too, and a couple of others too that we're actively talking to, Drake Bailey and stuff like that. So we should be having more shows for John and get them on the website in case you had missed them. So
we need to come up with a way to record the Randy Yarbrough show, The Lion, because he does not record them and can't send us a copy. So we don't have any way of posting it on our website after the fact.
Well, I can do that. I can do that because I can call into the listener line and just listen. And I have a call recorder right on my phone, so I can sit there and record it.
Okay, that'd be great. Okay. Either one of you gets a good one, just send it to me and I'll post
it. Yeah. I mean, mine usually won't work, but sometimes Pamela surprises me and kicks in. Yeah.
Yep. When you don't need
it. This is just a download on my Android. It works pretty good. And I also wanted to announce to anybody that if they, if they're listening to a local radio show or something like that, we'd like to get John or Gerard on there in the morning drive or the afternoon drive to espouse about NLA and our indictments and our court case and stuff like that. Once people hear this stuff, they usually don't turn sour to it, especially if they read the papers. I mean, that's actually it, you know. Once they read the papers, then that's it. The other thing I wanted to announce is that we came up with some new forms for writing affidavits that are just short and sweet and right to the point, and also a default affidavit for our habeas corpus and our nonjudicial foreclosure. So I'll be inquiring to those people in the coming days and weeks to have an affidavit filed for that. So then we can move forward on them and see if we can find some closure on some of these non-judicial foreclosures and habeas corpuses. All right, so with that, I think that's all the announcements I have. Sorry, John, I wish I could talk more, but I'm not much of a child.
I got my double dog in there. And
glass of chocolate milk to go with it. Yeah.
I'll eat dinner before I go to bed, you know.
I'll be bouncing off the walls here.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay, I guess we'll... now, Brent still's not in, right?
Right.
Okay. All right, we'll take our next caller here. So let's see who comes up first. Okay, next caller is... who do we open up? I didn't see anybody pop in.
1544 ends in, it's unmuted. 575 area code.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Give us your first name and state. 1544. Let me try again. Maybe that'll work. 1544. Try it now. 757. No, 575 area code.
Maybe he has his phone unmuted.
Yeah.
Maybe he has his phone unmuted or muted.
Yeah, check to see if you got phone or something muted, but we've unmuted you here. 575. Go right ahead. Okay, next caller. Okay. We don't pop up to the top on this.
Hello.
Yep.
Hi,
you go right ahead, Crystal. How you doing?
Oh, hanging in there.
Hang on one second. Jan, did you uncheck her, or did she just eventually be unchecked from my clicking next?
When you click next, it unmutes her.
Okay, but it takes a while before that check mark comes out of a book, so I noticed that. Okay, how you doing, Crystal? How you doing? And I did get some mail from you, I think, about a week ago, or maybe last week.
You got that? Okay, did you open it?
Yep. I started looking at it a little bit. It's on my desk here,
There is a white envelope inside there, too. Did you get that?
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. Also, I've been getting parents and children to be recruiting, and I'm going to be meeting with I've been meeting with, I just got in from a board meeting, I'm exhausted. And so I got four more parents, and we're going to try to put this in the after-school program for the kids and stuff. And I told them, I said, well, you know, we definitely got to raise money and stuff like that. And we're going to see if we can get donations and stuff like that for the kids so we can get things going and donating for the National Liberty Alliance, you know. And teaching these kids the leadership, you know, so this will be like also a work experience program for them, which they're excited about it. And I told the parents, and I said, I'm giving the numbers because the number changed tonight. What else? I went to the court. As a matter of fact, when you had mentioned 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago, about do no harm. And so I've been putting everything together, and I've been explaining that to the parents at the board meeting when I speak and all that. And all of a sudden now tonight, they're all picking up do no harm, you know. So I said, if anybody does anything intentionally, knowingly, I said, for example, if the school is totally contaminated and it's toxic and all that, and they know it, and they put children and people's lives in safety in danger, they knew it and signed off on it. I said, that's a crime. They signed off on it knowing it. So, you know, I said, use different illustrations on what is being harmful done to a person deliberately and not, you know. And so they're thinking about it. And like, oh, do no harm. They can't do this again, you know. I said, good. You know what I'm saying? I said, you're going to learn a lot more. So that was a very powerful statement. Because like when you mentioned that, you do no harm. Also, the executive order So I got the copies of that. Somebody ran it off that President Trump did December 21st.
Yeah, I got a copy of that, too. I think I got that.
I sent it
back, someone's.
I sent it to you.
Send? You know, and I didn't get it through you, though. Maybe
no,
you put
no,
an email.
No, you got you got an email because I sent it through email to.
Oh, okay.
And
right. Anyway, I did get it through Skype. It was dropped off to me.
Okay.
Who was I talking to that gave it to me? Was that you, Jan?
Was it April?
No.
April and Jan.
Yes.
Because so she got, okay. So I told him, make sure you get that. And so we made copies, and I told everybody just make, because it cost me enough, and I just unlike, you know. So I said, if everybody can make 10, 20 copies, just put it out there. You know, and it was just so powerful. Do no harm in that there. I said, wow. So I got another paper from the court because last week here, when I had to go to court, the judge said he was going to recuse himself from my case. And then he turned around, I'm not looking at your case. I'm not. And so the attorney, the one who's been bringing me to the court, she goes, well, you don't have to be, I can speak in your behalf. I said, why would I allow you to speak in behalf of me when you're the one who's causing me all this trouble, you know? I said, I can speak for myself, thank you. So she goes, the judge goes, well, I'm not going to speak to you, so I don't know what you're doing here. So at that point, I said, okay. So I went downstairs, and they said that I had my witnesses there, and we had left, and I said, okay, so we were here. He said he's not going to look at my case, and then we had left. He turned around and said, he went along with the attorneys to take $4,000 and put it on my property, which the nut, and you got the paperwork, the grantee, everything's in my name, so they didn't even do their homework on that. Last Monday, there was five judges that did not even show up for court. So now they're sitting there saying, well, they're not going to look at your case. And then another friend of mine said that her son got a call, and they said, don't come to court because there's no judges. So I don't know what's going on up here, but they didn't have those judges again in the court today. When I went back down there, I bought the paper, and I said, no contract, no proof of claim. And then I said, I want this stamp. So I bought the executive order, the papers I sent to you. I said, I want this amended with my case. And I also put a counterclaim in also to all four of them. So that was done. But I put that.
Yeah, one of the things we can take advantage of the fact that they never do their homework. They never really read much of anything. And I'm talking not just about lawyers. I'm talking about judges, too. But the lawyers are really big at that. They're never prepared. I mean, they do a little bit of homework, but it's bare minimum. I mean, you put your whole focus in against these people, you can win all the time. But, you know, and the judges, again, they do stupid things, like you just told us, you know.
I bought that in there because we're supposed to have a bad snowstorm. And I've been helping the other people. As a matter of fact, we saved 8 people's homes. They were going to be putting them out, and we got everything filed already for them, and they all got the grantee of their properties back in their name, you know? And so all the stuff, that, you know, as I said, what we've been doing here, you know, we all got a piece of the puzzle, and it's the puzzle beginning to come together. And so that's what we're doing. There's another young lady that I want to speak to, and she's doing great, helping us on that end too, which we're all helping each other. But it's starting to all come together. And when we go and file these papers and the affidavits pertaining to our property, guess what? They didn't even know what to do with it. And they go, well, what is this about? I said, that's neat. I said, if you don't know what it's about, I said, I don't have to explain it to you. I would like to record it.
Right, you should tell them you can't give them legal advice. I'm sorry, I can't give you legal advice.
Oh, but the funny thing was,
say it's against the law for me to give someone legal advice?
Oh, but this is the funny thing. the clerks, the head clerks of all the offices, none of them knew about this paperwork. Well, what is this? What does this mean? I said, that's for me to know and you to find out. So now they started scrambling and disappearing. So I guess they started calling the city attorneys and what have you. So they told them, I guess, they have to take it. I said, oh, by the way, can I have 3 certified copies of that? And then the original one, they got to send it back to you in the mail. And like I tell them, well, everybody who's doing this, I said, make sure you get the 3 certified copies, and they stamp it that day. Another person had gone into the court, to the clerk's office in the town hall and filed the papers. And you know what they told her? They told her, well, we're not accepting this. We're not taking this. So she called me all upset. I said, you get right back in that clerk's office and you have them to stamp it and get her name. That is, I said, whether she knows what she, that's not your problem. These are all legitimate, notarized documents, and it's an affidavit. And you just want that stamped, and then they will have to give you the volume and page to that.
You know, so, you want to pull down on notice and demand. I'm sure you have a copy of that. I mean, not notice and demand, notice to file. What is it called? File on
file
demand.
File on demand, yeah.
Yeah, filed on demand.
I'm sorry.
And
file on demand,
basically,
okay.
Even if you have to read it to them, make them read it, and you show them. It is against the law for you to refuse any paperwork. You can't.
Right.
You've got to take it.
Right. And so that's what I did. I went right back down there today, and I brought the other couple back down there. I said, let's go down and get this taken care of. Anything they send to you, you respond, and you put it right back in there. What they've been doing, because I was faxing stuff over, and I put up a package together for them, and I had it all stamped. You know what they did? They turned around and sent it back in the mail saying, we are not accepting this. I went right back down there.
Said they stamped it already?
Oh, they had already stamped, and they put an X. I said, this is illegal. Place
this
in my file. And I brought it right back down there. They also did it to hers. I said, bring it right back down there. I said, we want to stamp and place it in her file. And by the way, can I have your name? And who's the clerk? And see,
once a document is received, okay, that's it. Game over. They can't move that out. There's no legal way to remove that paperwork out of the file. It's there forever.
And
remove them all the time. But that you should show them the law on that. And on our file on demand paper, it has all those laws. So you
okay.
should get a hold of that.
Okay. Yeah, so that's, and then they wanted to put one of those toxic air raid, those phone towers on top of the school, which clearly we all know is total radiation because where I used to work and I had to go to school for all that stuff. I said, they're not even supposed to be within 2 miles of any residency. And they got one already in a building with people. And I said, everybody's getting sick, cancer, kidney failure. I mean, you wouldn't believe the mess. And now they want to put it on the school where the kids are. And, certain towns are saying, oh, no, we're not in our town, like in Greenwich and Stanford and New Canaan and all that. Oh, they're having a hissy fit about it because they all know it's total contamination. But yet they wanted to put it on top of a building. So I gave them that paper, and I said, what do we say? Do no harm. So at the meeting tonight, I said, do no harm. And I said, for youth who are going to go along with this, knowing this is deadly contamination and it's all on the news, and you sign off on this, you are putting the children, the teachers, and everybody at risk willingly. Do no harm, and you will be accountable and held liable for it. And they looked like, and I said, oh, and here's the paperwork here. And this is the paper that President Trump signed off on the executive order December 21st. So now the parents were sitting there, can I have a copy of that? I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you this copy. please make up at least 20 so that we'll have it for the next meeting, because I cannot, you know, it's costly, 5 pages and stuff, you know? And
These meetings are in the school?
Tonight we had about 200 people.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
Get these people into a committee of safety. You'd have the largest committee of safety in the nation.
As I said, I'm going to be meeting with the parents. They're all going to be calling me. I got other meetings coming up, but as I said,
that's one heck of a coalition.
The high school, and I'm dealing with the principals, and then the college. She does the trips for all the colleges, taking the kids ready for college. So she wants that a part of her for her 30 children too. So I said, because you know what, we want to put all these kids, and we want this as a work experience. We got 3 courts here. I said we want to get them all doing the rotating, so this would be a part of their curriculum, so these kids could have a work experience, and it's fun to learn. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they would have to go to court at least 2 hours rotating the courts and taking their notes. And I told them about the calls, and they can go on the site and listen to the recalls. Is this going to be the permanent number, by the way?
Yeah, hopefully this will continue to go on. They're not supporting this particular one anymore, but it works better. We don't want them to make any changes. You know, they're not expanding it or making any new corrections or anything. But the one we had before, you know, we had some problems there. This is going to work out. This has worked out better for us before when we were on this.
When we had this, I never got it. Okay, yeah, but as I said, so that's what we're going to be doing. And I got some pretty sharp, concerned parents and stuff, you know. And they love that, because, like, when you taught with that 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 mm-hmm. weeks ago, about do no harm, and I said, what? And I kept on playing it back, listening to what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, so when I went to the board meeting 2 weeks ago, I put everything, do no harm, do no harm. And so 6 people came on and said, what did you mean by saying do no harm? I said, if anybody's doing something willingly, knowing that it's going to harm people, that's illegal, you know?
Right.
So, and they're supposed to be there making wise decisions that's not going to harm us, you know? And it's just like they have to have proof of claim when they're taking people's homes. Where is the contract? Oh, by the way, there was a big article in our papers about a month or so ago about if you do not have a signed contract, that is fraudulent. I didn't see the paper because I don't get the paper, but I got several calls on it. So I said, oh, this is great.
Interesting. You know, again, everybody needs to be getting involved locally and do exactly what Crystal is doing here, or the best of your ability, and get partnership with other people.
And the big thing that happened about a month and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
I forgot because I hadn't spoken to you.
Just so you know, I got a message. You're on 15 minutes, so we got to move to the next caller. But go ahead.
Okay, but I just got this last thing. They, with that WPCA, the ones who's been stealing everybody's homes illegally, all righty, everybody, because I guess different ones were following what was going on in the courts with me, because I've always been representing myself. So all of a sudden, I said, when I put it together about the WPCA, then the people started screaming about the book WPCA and the billing and what have you. So what all the people in the community started going off, the Common Council subpoenaed all the city attorneys to the court, and they were nervous as all sand.
Wow.
And those are the same ones I see in the court. So, you know, the fire's under them at this point, what's going on. And I said, and that's it. But that's why I just wanted to report to you before I fell asleep.
Okay, appreciate it. You got in early.
Okay.
You got in early enough.
Yes.
All right, thanks, Crystal. Right. Appreciate
you're
the
welcome.
Call.
Have a good night. All right, bye-bye.
You too. Okay, let's go to our next caller. It looks like it's Terry in Colorado. Go right ahead, Terry.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Pretty good. When I mentioned, I've been watching the, keeping up with the Q stuff, and there's several what's called Discord chat. Discord is the program that runs, and they use that. It's a gamer thing, but it's great for crowdsourcing things. And when I mentioned somebody about the NLA, they said, oh, we already looked into that, and their case was dismissed. And I said, but they're still filing their papers, and they're not, the court isn't sending them back. And so they took another look, and that's how that came up.
Yeah, one of the things they want to understand and is that this is an extraordinary case. We're not in there just as a lawsuit. We're in there as we the people dealing with subversion. And we're in there with the intentions of not only filing papers and putting everybody on notice, that means all of our elected officials, which we've done that, and we started off with what's called a quo warranto, which really puts us into a position of really shutting them down, legally speaking, if they don't answer. And they didn't answer, so we really are in a position, which would be an impossibility. But the thing is when things really get to the end of things, we can go after the CAFR accounts and all those things and give it back to the people. But the thing is that we have we're using this ultimately as a depository, a place where we can put all of our paperwork, file it in the court, so we're under the auspices of the court, and that's what we're using this case for. We're not using this case to directly go out and sue anyone. We did use it in the beginning for them to give us answers. But when they don't respond and they don't do what has to be done, then we're going to go through a potential indictment. We have to ask for the indictment, and I'm sure we'll get these indictments. For instance, we did a lot of habeas corpuses, and we really got to buckle down to call for an indictment against all these judges and all these U.S. attorneys or state attorneys or whatever attorneys they are that participated in the quashing of those indictments. So we need to indict, a quashing of those papers, which was the habeas corpuses. We also want to move the same situation with what's going on with the foreclosures. And Jim spoke a little bit about that earlier tonight, and we're going to work on some paperwork to really do the final paperwork, which then we'll move towards asking for an indictment on these individuals. And again, we're going to file it in our court. We're under the auspices of the court, and this is proving RICO, this is proving subversion, and at some point in time, we will get movement on this. We also, of course, we mentioned this before, I'll mention it again, we send it to Chuck Grassley with the Judiciary Committee, that's the senator. We send it to Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, and we send a copy to President Trump. So, and then, of course, we file it in the courts. But that is the key. It is a filed, that's what we really have to push. These are filed indictments in the court. We have a number, a filing number. They can go up to PACER, and they can find that it's there. They can download it right off PACER. They can come to our site to download it, whatever they want to do.
Yeah, they were thrilled to find out that the latest paper had been filed on the 28th of February this year.
Right.
And the three people there, Inet Coder, he's the guy who runs the 24/7 soapbox for the Q-Chat. Gran Torino is one of the main guys in there, one of the moderators, and so is Daddy Dragon, and they seem to, that was a good thing, and they're really thrilled to see it. And they kind of said they're going to not put it all out all over the place because it's already been sent to Trump, it's already been sent to Sessions, it's already been sent to Congress, which all this came out in that video. It's hard to not say something. I hear so many complaints about why people can't get, how they can't get officials to do the right things. And I see many places where the answer is, it's either the Committee of Safety or it's common law grand jury. You can do this. And I created an NLA workroom Discord chat. So anybody wants to come up, I'll show you how to do the chat. They are currently working on an Internet Bill of Rights, and it won't finish as a Bill of Rights, but they're writing it right now, and it's being sourced by a whole bunch of people, 50, 60 people, and they've gotten up to version 1.4 or something now. And NLA has acquired a bad name because of everything that has happened and the way people have said things against us, and there was nobody to defend us at the time. Right. And this is a way that you can get involved if you want to get involved. So go find Discord. That's the name of it. It's got a little bit of a learning curve, but it's not bad. And then tell it you want to go to a room called NLA Workroom, at this NLA space workroom. And I'll try and be there as much as I can. Leave me a message. And if you need an invite, my email address is out there on the National Liberty Alliance org website. It's tmore at 1791.org. T-M-O-O-R-E at 1791.org. And I'd be happy to help anybody through the learning curve and get them going. This is a big opportunity, and I think we need to have some people up there if they can. And this is something that anybody can do, and it's not hard. And I think that's about all I had. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take our next caller. The next caller is a 602 number. You should have heard. You've just been unmuted. Give us your first name and your state.
Yeah, my name's Martin, and I'm out here in Arizona.
How you doing, Martin?
Hey, pretty good. And so I've been in this swimming around in this movement since I went through family court. So it's been about 4 years, okay? So I think I'm pretty knowledgeable and have some good background stuff. So then I stumbled across you guys almost by accident, I'm going to say, about a month ago. And so now I'm starting to find out. I'm fishing around trying to find out, you know, who's accomplishing what, okay? And so there's a bunch of groups all over the place. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. And so I know I can tell by your website that you got a pretty big history. So you've been active in a lot of different areas. Some of the hot buttons that I've picked up in my travels here is a jury in family court or any of these so-called courts of equity. Okay, the Seventh Amendment.
Well, hold it. In the family courts, it's very, very clear, at least in New York State. You should look in your constitution. In New York, what state did you say you were in?
Arizona.
Arizona. Okay, in New York State, it's referred to as a court of record. Okay, court of record, that's jury. But go ahead. Just keep that in mind.
Well,
and go, you should look it up in your state constitution.
See, I've been down at the Arizona State Legislature and said, well, how come we can't have juries? And why is it that lawyers are regulated by lawyers? Where did that come from? Okay. Mm-hmm. And the answer is for juries, they say, well, it's a court of equity, which means it's a court of chancery. Lord Chancery,
yeah,
way
that.
Back in the 16th something or others, said, and basically, we have to do it because it's British common law. And so then I go, well, you know, we know how to take care of King George.
Yeah, but I thought
we already did
we're
that.
We're not under British common law, though. You know, we were under the common law as it was in England at the time of the Constitution, which is not British common law, but it is common law. You know, common law goes all the way back in the Bible, 1600 BC.
You know what? This is a pretty simple argument in my mind. The Seventh Amendment is pretty clear. It says your right to a jury is preserved. That's all it says. Okay. Now, in Arizona, your right to a jury in Superior Court is inviolate. It may not be violated. Okay. It doesn't say anything about courts of equity or courts of chancery or any of this nonsense. Okay. This is all a creation of judges making rulings And so then what do we do when they impose something called absolute despotism on us? Well, that's in our founding documents, what we have the right and the duty to do. And so, you know, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, if you go into Article 3, it is very clear. There are no such things as chancery courts. Pennsylvania, I think, calls them chancellors and so on. But look, that's not what we are. That's a huge error in the way they set things up, and it does need to be fixed. And hopefully the people of Pennsylvania will fix that. There's other places that do the same thing, and they go right out and call them chancellors or chancery courts. But in this nation, there are only two lawful courts, and actually there are administrative courts that are okay, but you sign up for that. You know, anybody can create an administrative court, but the people have to agree to it. And certainly they can't do criminal actions. They're called nisi prius courts, and, you know, you don't have to involve unless you first accept.
Okay, well, here's a question. How about this for a question? Your right to a jury is preserved or inviolate. Pick one. Either one works. Okay. Where does it say that the jury has to be furnished by the state?
Exactly.
Now, yeah,
in the federal courts, let me tell you what happened here. You see, the people became too complacent, and then they were working on our education. They dumbed us down. And it got to the point where nobody's calling for the jury, okay? And so the states took that up, and, you know, on a federal level, they didn't make a law. They didn't have any process, although they were doing it. They were calling the juries, collecting them together, orientating them, and doing the cases. And that's when they snuck in the law in the federal level. It was 1970 when they snuck in the law, the process and the procedures that the United States attorney can call the jury. And call and pull together a jury. And so they were doing that before because nobody else was doing it. The sheriff wasn't doing his job because he forgot, and they purposely didn't give him an education.
So that's how that got going.
But we're in a battle to actually deal with that problem right now. That's one of our major problems. The people, the first grand jury that was ever called was called by the people, and it was recorded on what we know as the Magna Carta. And so that's the first one known in the Western world, you know, in England.
Chapter 39, yeah.
Yeah, and so now we have our Constitution, and there are two legal courts in our Constitution. There is an equity court and a court of law. Now, a court of equity ultimately deals with issues between two people. It deals with contracts, which are usually issues between two people again, and all that kind of stuff. That's what an equity court
does. Who has the authority to terminate your parental rights? Who has that authority?
I'm going to explain that, too. But anyway, that is called an equity court. Now, any equity court, because the Constitution tells us that any issue you bring into the court over $20, and that's pretty cheap, $20, you know, so I'm sure my child is worth more than $20. But anyway, anything you bring into the court, it's over $20, you have a right to call for a jury. In most cases, if you're going to get a judge that's going to operate under American jurisprudence, which is their command to operate under American jurisprudence, which they do not, and they even, you know, they bastardize the American jurisprudence all around it. They got all these other things. They got tax jurisprudence. I mean, they're just ridiculous. But all of that has nothing to do with us. But anyway, they're supposed to be operating under American jurisprudence. If they were operating under American jurisprudence and really being just, they would make good decisions because they should be good listeners if they've listened to a lot of cases. They should be able to judge individual things. And because it's being judged by an individual who is a servant and also an elected individual usually, but in any event, he works for the state or the federal government. Well, then that individual, there's a setup for, of course, an appellate process, two or three processes to go through the appeals, and then finally you can hit the United States Supreme Court. Very few cases will get there, but in any event, this is the court process. Now, as far as dealing with courts that deal with family matters, particularly with children, I would never, ever, ever, ever tolerate it. Anybody who allows that to happen when the state steps in and tries to control you and your life and your children tries to take your children or threatens your children, immediately you got to get a jury involved. Only a jury could do something like that. And, of course, a jury will never agree with these things.
I'll tell you something you don't know, is that there's a movement going on right now where people are setting up jury panels, and when people come out of these courts of equity with a decision that they think is unjust or unlawful, they can take it to a jury panel and get the jury to rule either to affirm or to overrule declare void and unenforceable the orders of the judge and tell them they think it should be and tell them to start over again.
Are they operating under the auspices of the court? Or are they down in the back room of Denny's? Where are they operating from?
They're operating from someplace other than the court, because the court is the jury's required. It doesn't say who has to furnish it.
Well,
is that not correct?
This is a problem, and we got to be careful here. And I like the idea and the thinking, but we got to be careful because we get into vengeance and we get into sickness and illness, psychologically speaking, where you get all this crazy stuff that comes up, and it just really turns everything else up on its head. Here's the thing: they're acting as a grand jury or they're acting as a trial jury.
Well, they function mechanically as a grand jury because they just this is not a grand jury. They're functioning as a trial jury, but mechanically they function as a grand jury because they only review individual orders. They don't sit there through the proceeding and listen to all the stuff. They just look at the orders as an appellate.
There's no such thing that exists, to my understanding and knowledge, and I've looked at a lot of stuff, and if something like this existed, I would know about it, I think, and maybe I missed it, but there's nowhere in history that this thing exists that you're talking about. There are only two different jury involvements. One is the grand jury and the appellate jury, which is the trial jury. The grand jury looks and deals with criminal actions. Nothing else is criminal actions, so they will indict. Okay, if there's an injury, then there can be an indictment. Okay, for every injury,
so we know that.
Remedy.
Now, the question is, the other side deals with the equity, but now,
once you get into court, you have a trial jury, and the trial jury makes a decision. Look at what you need to do. If you have a court, it's a very simple process. People just need to learn it, and it's an uphill battle, but it could be achieved. If you get pulled into family court, I would only go one time. Just one meeting, and usually you have to go because usually they try to take your kids or whatever the case may be. It could be a threatening, or they already got your kids, so you got to go the first time. And so you go the first time, and you go there by special appearance. They probably won't understand what that means, but that's okay. You get it on a record. I'm here by special appearance, and you're listening to what it is that they want to do, and you can object to everything, and they say, yes, you can object all you want, but we're going further. That's fine. That's it. Then you move it to the federal court for cause. Because they're not operating in a proper process.
Well, the average person's not going to do that.
Well,
okay? that's
no
the problem that we
remedy.
Have.
Then there's no other law
well,
remedy.
You're aware
maybe
of.
Maybe there is. And
I would agree with that. I would agree with you. That you're aware of. I would agree.
That I'm aware.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Okay.
But I doubt you're going to find something. But if you do, hey, I'd run with it too. What do you got?
Well,
do you have anything?
Yes. Actually, in
okay.
fact, we do.
By the way,
okay.
But the process you just told me, that's not lawful.
Well, because it hasn't been written down and declared as
no,
law
no,
at
no,
this time.
No, because it's not part of the process that we're used to or seen or anywhere in the past. There's nothing biblically that can really lay that out and bring that forward. Look, there are processes you can use, okay? Again, that's what we're doing. We're under the auspices of the court because we opened the case, particularly for a depository, and to put all elected officials, both on the judicial
okay.
and the other political realms, okay, on notice, okay. And we're still filing papers. They're receiving our papers. We file with Jeff Sessions. So we tell him we've sent letters to him, let him know we need prosecutors down, send some U.S.
Okay,
attorneys.
Well,
when he's ready, I'm sure he'll do it. And
I'm just letting you know that there is something else going on out there that you probably just haven't heard of yet. Okay, which is okay.
Okay.
Now, I have another question.
You were going to say that there's a process to deal with the the family courts. They are a problem. I agree.
Well, it's any court. It's actually worse in juvenile court, and it's actually worse over in probate court. I don't know if you've heard of medical kidnapping. Okay.
Yeah, we're very familiar with all this stuff.
That's yeah, right. All this stuff. All this stuff goes on because there's no jury looking over the shoulder of the judge. That's the fundamental disconnect here in the process. They've taken the jury system out of the courts, and once that happens, and once these judges can do anything they want, exactly, as once these judges can do anything they want without oversight or accountability, we are screwed.
So you got to pull a jury into the courtroom. Pull a jury into the courtroom. You can force that. Look, two things will happen. Let me explain something. One of two things will happen. I'm going to give you a scenario. They come and take my children, or they threaten to take my children. They want me to go deal in their process. I go down by special appearance. I disagree with everything they have to say. I object to it all, and I don't get nasty with these people. I don't get threatening or anything. And then they'll give me another date, and I'll object to that. And they'll say, well, you better show up, buddy, anyway, and you walk out the door. Well, then you go down, you write your papers, you go home, you write your papers. You can even put a writ of error in that court if you want, but I wouldn't go there at that point. I would first go and file it with the federal court. And you're filing the federal court for this court violating your right of due process. Now, of course, you want to be in that court and tell them you want a jury. If you want to try to take something away from me, like my children, okay, that's my property. You know, my body is my property. My children's body is my property until I train them well enough to be able to take care of their own property.
So,
but hold on. Let me just finish this. So you go to the federal court and you file the papers for due process. Okay, that's for cause, that these people are not giving you due process. They got to answer that paper. And if you write that paper correctly, focusing on just the fact that they do not have the authority, the jurisdiction to operate that way, and they cannot give you due process, they're going to lose that. They'll be told. Now, they're not going to.
I've been in federal court three times, okay? And all I get is dismissed, okay?
Yes.
So, you know, the judge gets to say whatever he wants. And when he says dismissed, okay, then you're back to square one, okay?
You got to give him a place to hang his hat.
So I want the right answer to come out of the trial court because they know that.
No, you don't have to go to trial court. Look at. Unless they really have a case, you're not going to be brought to trial court. You're missing the point. The reason why you went three times to a federal court and three times they dismissed it is because you gave that judge a place to hang his hat. Federal judges are not like state judges. They're a lot more savvy. They're much more educated. They're highly educated. They understand exactly what they're doing. They're upholding the status quo, and they're walking on an edge. And if you know what that edge is, you can kick them off that edge. They're going to see if you lay your case out in such a way that they can't move right or left and can't find a place to hang their hat, you're going to win in that court. And how you're going to win in that court usually is it's going to be behind the scenes. And you're not going to be called into this meeting because you're not a lawyer. But they're going to have a meeting, and they're going to tell the other side, the judge is going to say, I want this case. And he's not going to explain himself to these people. He's not going to say, I have no place to hang my hat here. He's going to say, I want this case out of my court, and I want it out now. And the next hearing you're going to come to, if they even have one, that case is going to be, they're going to drop their case, and he's going to let this case just fall. And as long as you don't push it, which you probably won't because the case is dropped against you, not in the court no more, this case will fall away. And he doesn't have to make a decision because they don't want to make a decision. But you can wait.
Okay, well, we're talking about, I'm just giving you a heads up. That there's other stuff out there that is just not on the radar that you guys have seen. So, but you can be looking for it. It's coming pretty soon. Now, there's something else that's coming up pretty soon, it looks like. I don't know if you've read Trump's executive order on martial law. Have you seen that?
We just recently, I read through half of a paper that I just got on executive order. And let me see what it's labeled on the top here. Executive order blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse.
There's another
one. Corruption. But I know he did do something on He did a few of them, yeah. But go ahead,
well, there's the other one that came out just recently. Basically, what it does is it says that martial law, and it fills in some of the blanks that's already in the statute. He's not really creating new stuff. He's plugging up a few of the holes, saying, saying that everything applies. And the bottom line is that the military courts have jurisdiction over U.S. civilians when martial law has been declared. That is the tool that it looks like is about to be used at some point against a bunch of these deep state people. And that would probably include Hillary and Obama and the whole works.
That is a very, very dangerous thing to happen. And if anybody else did it, I would be alarmed. I understand why Trump is moving that direction. I got to go read the exactly to see what he's exercising. But what he is really trying to do is really focus in towards a particular group, particularly this executive order that he put on blocking the property of persons. And really, he wants to chase these people internationally. So that was one of the things probably, and I can't say I know, but this is what my presumption would be. And the other thing, ultimately, is he wants to try these people outside of the courts of law. So he wants to bring them out,
Guantanamo.
Guantanamo.
Now that place has been expanded.
He wants to get them out there so that, yes, exactly. And that's why
he
wants to get them out to trial, because they got so many people to trial and so many problems and so many situations that they'd bog down the courts here and we'd never get anywhere. These people would go on for years and years and years. So it has to be a different kind of a tribunal trial. And he's going after them for subversion, so that makes it a situation where you can get into martial law. So I kind of understand all that stuff. And all these things have been in place, and which is very interesting, because we're using what they put out there against them now. And that's funny. It's interesting.
I'm just saying this because when you read through this, I mean, it all of a sudden just slaps you right in the face. Protecting America through lawful detention of terrorists is one of the sections. Blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse or corruption. Okay, so that's going to go to the pedophilia, and that's going to go to the Uranium One. Okay,
absolutely.
All this stuff.
Yes. Absolutely. I can see it all fit together like a glove, and it's very dangerous. If it was anyone else that was doing this, I'd be concerned.
Oh, absolutely. Every one of these swords has two edges. You're right about that.
Let me just say that, I just got a note here. You've been over 15 minutes. We try to keep things moving along. But do you have anything final you want to say? And then you get back in.
Now, you mentioned earlier about all these kids being removed from these schools to protest the shooting in Florida.
Well, they were actually
and how it's
they
political
were doing
indoctrination.
It in, they, yeah, they were doing it inside the school.
Okay. Well, we had it in our schools here in Arizona where they're actually walking out of school to protest this stuff, and it's political indoctrination is what it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with an organization called Indivisible?
No.
Okay. This thing apparently is a, you can go on Indivisible, just Google Indivisible, and we have an Indivisible Arizona. I bet you have an Indivisible New York or wherever state you're in. And this, mm-hmm. these people are about opposing the Trump, this is a practical guide for resisting the Trump agenda. That's what they'll send you if you want to buy their book. And they're the ones that are organizing these rallies, and George Soros is a huge contributor. So I'm just saying
you
want to understand.
I'm going to check that out.
There's another one.
Yeah.
It's called Media Matters.
I heard that one too.
You bet it is.
One.
Yeah,
media matters is another
people
one.
People need
okay.
parents, people who are parents and people who are grandparents, they should be flooding their schools. They should, first of all, check to see if this is going on in their school. And if it is, you should be making havoc there. The Liberty Group
well,
should
I'm,
be involved. That's
I'm,
the
joining in, I'm joining Indivisible so I can get the emails and everything and find out what these monkeys are up to.
That's a good idea.
Does that
very
make any sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's all become indivisible and go
well,
in here and
I
find out what these
say
monkeys
all
are
of
doing.
Us come, but a couple of us should bring the information.
Yeah.
Okay, look,
find out
move
when
on to the next caller, but I appreciate the call, and you're welcome to get back in the queue if we can catch you again a little while in the call or another day. We'll continue this conversation. Okay?
Okay, yep. Later. Okay, bye.
Thanks a lot. Martin, right? Was that the name on there? Anyway, okay. Let's go to next caller, which is Fred.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
go ahead, Fred.
I had a...
Time's up. Let's move to our next caller now.
I deserve that. I do. I would enlighten you on some things, but I don't want to take the group's time. Okay. Now, the things I wanted to know is, in our election system, we elect judges. Now, I know you referred to the committee man process, but these judges sign an oath of office when they take and they swear on a Bible. Yeah, great, fine. But when they're running for office, when you have to walk their paper as a committee man, is your opportunity to require them to read something and stand behind it, maybe through some kind of a verbal or written contract. Or am I getting through to you?
Well, absolutely. Look at anybody who's an elected individual, judges are elected individual. They're elected maybe to become a town judge, okay? They could be elected to state. They could be elected to different levels, okay, that affect you in your election district. And it is the committee men who walk their papers to get the signatures to get them onto the ballot, okay? And the first order of business is get them onto the ballot, you know, for the election, for the primary, okay? And then after that, once they're in, then they're in. And if they win the primary, they move to the next level and they get elected. If there's nobody going up against them, they move right from the primary into the election. But they're not getting into that position without the committeemen. And that's why we have to take the committeemen process back. And that's what the committees of safety is all about. We need to create committees of safety. And at some point, when we succeed in the law, in the courts here, we're going to start pushing for the law to be applied concerning the committeemen, and these people will get in to take power and authority over. Then they will decide. And yes, it should be a constitutional question to these judges. I'd like to know, are you going to uphold the Constitution? Are you really going to uphold the Constitution? We need knowledgeable people, and we have the knowledge here. We need the people to know what kind of questions to ask them to make sure they're not going to rule under any other jurisdiction. Now, town judges, you know, that's a problem with a town judge or a village judge or a city. Those judges are a problem because they're unconstitutional. You know, in order for them to hold up their courts, they have to first ask the individual who's been stopped by some cop in the street and been given some ticket for speeding, and the individual, the judge needs to say, okay, I want to let you know that you have the opportunity to not participate, but and if you decide to participate, then we'll go forward with this court. You might be fined. You might be incarcerated. So what say you, Mr. Fred? And your answer would be, well, I'm out of here. I don't want to participate. You're going to go out of business because it's an EC Prius court. They don't have the power to fine or incarcerate. We need to understand that. Why is it that they created these courts? Because the upper courts would never work on those particular problems, speeding tickets and things of that nature, all these different code violations. They would never, you wouldn't,
then
those courts
would be in the case. The committee of safety needs to abolish the position of judge in that case.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. I never even thought of from that perspective. Yes, they can refuse to walk
what
up,
they
well.
Can or cannot do, like marry somebody, divorce somebody, and give them those parameters if that's it. But define what that
well,
judge can do.
Yeah, but you're looking
we
at someone that's just...
We are the National Liberty Alliance. We are the grand jury. We can throw them in jail if they... We can indict them. So why don't
right.
we sit down and write down the parameters and make them live up to our wishes? I yield.
Here's the problem. There would be a problem, and I don't know how this would play out. I really don't. But if the committeemen refused to walk any of the papers for any of the judges by saying that this is unconstitutional, they have no power and authority to do things they're doing. Hang on one second. I got to plug in my headset because it's beeping me. Hang on. Okay, plugged in. Okay, they don't have the power or the authority to do these things. So, now, the best way to deal with this is to cut off their purse, starve them, okay? That's what has to be done. And we can do that from the grand jury's perspective, okay? We could do that from the trial jury's perspective. The committeemen, I don't know how it would play out, what they would do, what would happen. And you know, if the Republicans refuse, you see, that's the other problem with the committeemen. And we need to bring back ultimately one-party position, which is a constitutional position. They can hold the two parties in name, but we need to get together, Democrats and Republicans, and discuss. We did this in New York. We had a meeting in Kingston, New York, when we had our first convention, committeeman convention. And the committeeman convention was both Republicans and Democrats. And we came up with decisions, and we both came up with the same party rules and everything. They were all interested in getting the Constitution upheld by these people who are holding office. And that is all we need to do. We don't need to get into the issues. We don't need to fight. You believe this, I believe that. Go live your life. Do what you want. But let's get these people to only do the job that they've been prescribed to do through the Constitution. That's all they need to do. Anything more than that, they don't have no business doing. And now, I don't know how it would play out if some committeemen just decided, and could you get them all? And what happens if the Republicans do it and the Democrats don't? You know, so I don't know where that would go. Interesting idea. Something we could think about. But we can go after these. Here's how we shut them down. Here's how we shut them down. We make notice when we're in power and when we're in authority, we go talk to the sheriff and we let him know. Anybody that comes to this jail of yours, to be put into that jail, any town cop that brings a prisoner, you want to see the papers. You want to see, first of all, that there was an indictment or they're being held for the call of a grand jury, number one. No indictment, get them out of here. Number two, you want to see the trial by jury. They're being put into that jail. No, got it? Get them out of here. Don't accept the prisoner, okay? That shuts everybody down. It shuts all the town courts. It shuts the village courts. It shuts the city courts. It shuts down the local police. They're going to fall out of business because there's no revenue. You know, this is all a moneymaker thing. Without that court open, you have no town police. You have no city police. You have no village police. Nothing wrong with that. You know, you say, well, we don't have enough police. Well, there's numerous things that others should be operating at the same time. First of all, the sheriff's program is going to have to grow. They may take over some of these, you know, precincts or whatever you might call them. And they may get more police, more deputies, okay? They will take control over that. But bear in mind, they wouldn't all need that many, depending on the crime rate, really. They wouldn't really need all that many. New York City is a problem. But New York City is a very unique city, at least here in New York. It is the only city mentioned in our Constitution that calls the city courts courts of record. So that's like a county court, okay? They really should change the name from city courts to county courts is what they really should do. But that's okay. They are supposed to be operating as a court of record, so you can hold them to those that requirement that they operate as a court of record. But when you get the town courts and the other city courts and the village courts, and you shut them down by not accepting the prisoners, and you don't, and you back up the people who are trying to be forced. Look, if you don't pay your fine, what are they going to do? The only thing they could do is put out an arrest order for you. Okay, no. They put out an arrest order. They got to take you and put you in a jail. Where are they going to take you? They got to take you to a county jail. Can't do it.
Sir, I need to follow up with one more part of my question here.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed in your email there was a big thing. It said, Ranger with question mark. sir, I was the one that brought up that question. And it was during the last half of our meeting when we were having an open discussion.
Uh-huh.
And the reason
I listened to that whole thing.
The reason I brought up Ranger, and I think it's got a lot of power here in our conversation in what you were just talking about.
I think it does, too. I agree with you.
Because jurisdiction has always been a problem. Jurisdiction. Okay, we have federal officers with federal jurisdiction. We have state cops with state jurisdiction. Well, what about the local town cop? Does he have any right at all enforcing state laws or federal laws or Coast Guard laws or military laws or any other laws?
Right.
What is he, a damn meter maid? You know?
That's all he is. He's they write tickets. That's what they
do. So why is this idiot carrying a gun when we have more rights than he does?
Well, that's a good question, because you have to go back and see how it unfolded over in time. You know, it is, it's a problem. You look at
that's why I bring it up, John, because I
think
that we need to write some papers about these specific topics and stick them in as memorandums of law.
Well, I agree. Maybe we'll get to that point soon, but look at, you know, when you look at the system and how things went, you have what's called, you're familiar with gated communities, and you know in a gated community, you drive up to get in here. We have some here down in Connecticut and over into the far side of New York here. Let me see, the east, south, sort of southeast of New York, but not as far down as the city. But we have gated communities. You drive into that community, you have to go through this little house there with a cop or two. They're really security guards. But they've got loaded weapons on them. They carry handcuffs. They look just like a cop, okay? But they are cops operating in that gated community. And they want to know where you're going, and they ask you all these questions, and you get in. I've come into a couple of those communities to do work. And they want to know who you are and all that other stuff, and you come out. Now, the people set that up. And it's perfectly legal. Any arrest they make ultimately really is a citizen's arrest, because they're not a police officer. Now, when you get to town police and all these other things, generally, legally speaking, they're really making citizen's arrests. Okay, nevertheless, they have all the proper papers and everything as if they, and it's gotten to that point, they make an arrest as if they're a police department. Okay? But it's not so. Okay? Reality is the way one perceives it. And if you allow things to go on long enough, and you start to believe that that's the way it is. If you want to change something, there's a guy that wrote a book. I don't remember the book, but the book really was talking about the idea, if you repeat a lie a certain amount of times, okay, no matter how ridiculous or anything, people will start to believe it. And that's where we're at. Reality is the way one perceives it. You believe it's a law, then you're going to be upheld to that law, okay? And so we can get rid of all of it. I can't even think of the state police being legal. I mean, do we really need a state police? I don't know. I think what we need are the sheriffs to operate their counties and be able to communicate between each other from district to district. So when they deal with a problem that runs from county to county, they can operate collectively together as if they were the state police.
John.
See,
John,
that's my thing.
Wait, John. Excellent point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I want to expound upon that before our time runs out.
We need sheriffs.
State law. Okay, we have state assemblies that are passing laws. Like in California here, they just passed some kind of a stupid law where your kids have to be vaccinated or they kick them out of school. Well, that's a state law. Now, it should have the same effect as a federal law. No effect whatsoever on the behavior of the individual human being in the state. Do you understand what I just said? They have no power.
Say it again. Let me make sure I understand, because I'm not sure I do. Say it again.
The state legislature has no power to regulate the behavior of the citizen at all.
Right.
Period.
Correct. Right.
We have rights to protect us against them. That should
right.
be our whole issue, is carrying guns to protect ourselves against them and their armed police.
I can't think of one good reason to have state police. Someone might say, well, they need to patrol the state highways. My question is, why? to give them tickets? They can't give them tickets. Look, people need to be responsible for their own actions. You know, we got that highway to nowhere or something, or road to nowhere or something video up there. It shows clearly that people are social. We're social creatures, and we work together to exist together. It's in nature. Okay, once in a while you get someone who's rowdy and goes off the wrong side, and they're going to injure someone, and they're going to be held accountable, and they'll wish they never did it, and someone will learn a lesson by watching that, you know, and so on and so forth. But the thing is the bottom line, we're social creatures. You put up a sign, 60 miles an hour, that's suggested speed. And most people will probably maintain the 60. Some will go 70 or 80, and people will do what they do. If you injure someone because you're doing something you shouldn't have been doing, you should have been more careful, you're responsible, and then you got to take care of that injury, okay? You have to be held responsible. Courts should be looking for restitution, not jail sentences. It doesn't even make any sense. In the Bible doesn't even talk about jails. There is no jails. You know, someone commits a murder, it's intent, and so on and so forth. Take life, you lose your life. That's it. Everything else you can work out. But, you see, the state police, I don't know what job they really could really be doing. They're political animals. They answer to the governor. They don't answer to the Constitution. If they try to uphold the Constitution above the will of the governor, they're going to get fired. And that's a problem if they're going to enforce law. So they can't enforce law. That's the sheriff's job, number one. They can't enforce codes because they can't monitor or control our behavior. I can't think of a reason for them. And again, once we get in and we push towards the sheriffs, if the state police arrest someone, where do they take them? They take them to the county jail in the county that they're in. That's where they take them. And the sheriff says, I ain't taking that guy. Where, you know, where's the indictment? Where is the show that he's committed something that I need to hold him in for an indictment? Where is the jury decision on this? You see, that's how we solve the problem, working with the sheriff and making sure he understands. And all of this stuff will just fall apart. It'll just go away. It's huge, but it's all a matter of an education, all a matter of obeying and exercising the law. That's all it is. Final point, Fred?
You keep saying it's jurisdiction and it's procedure in court.
Right, due process.
What does it do?
And the sheriff can't take them if they're not following those two. If they don't have the jurisdiction, ain't taking them. Don't have the due process, ain't taking them. Solve all problems.
The sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer in the county.
Right.
But my question there is, who else in the county? Because we have city mayors and a governor of a state, but there is no other figure in the county except for maybe the coroner.
Well, look, there's the county controller. There's that whole executive and, monetary process system in each county. And so there's some things. They have an assembly, but I don't know. They can't really make law, you know. I mean, but they can discuss.
The super vipers, but who do they answer to?
Right, but most of what they're really dealing with, I imagine, or should be dealing with ultimately is the economic, problems and situations of the county. Because they have to make sure that the money flows and everything. That's the county controller to begin with. How money is spent in that county for whatever purposes, you know, all of that is in that process. I don't know too much about it, but I know those things are part of the process. But here's the thing. If you can get sheriffs to become educated and understand and bring them to that point to understand what the Constitution really says, they can just shut down by not taking these prisoners. And I'm telling you, in no time at all, you will not see a town court, a village court, a city court. They'll all disappear. You won't see town police, city police, and they'll all disappear. Okay, they'll just be gone. You may see a few more sheriff deputies, okay, because they'll fill the void. They're looking for to help the people, really to protect them from people who will violate them. but they're there to also protect us from the government, from the state government, the federal government, the any government, you know. And that's all there is. That's all that's necessary. You know, the county courts have the power and the authority to hear arbitrational cases of small, you know, small. What do they call it? A case that you bring up against someone under $1,000 or under $2,000 or whatever it is, you know,
small,
you can move those small claims. You could move those into the county court. They could pick up that kind of stuff. And it's all arbitration. People come in and they sign in and agree to a quick arbitration. And as long as the person sitting and listening, you know, really makes a good, honest decision, if there's nothing forcing them to do evil, and they're really going to follow their conscience, and they've been taught jurisprudence, and they're taught to really just let's try to find the truth and be give a good justice, a good judgment here. I think it'll happen on a regular basis. I've been in arbitration, and it works pretty good in most cases. You know,
John, I'd like to offer a suggestion. That would be that the sheriff forms a posse of individuals that carry guns, know how to use them, and they have an active duty period of, say, 2 weeks a year or whatever. Yep. And during that period, they actually wear that uniform. They walk around. They walk the walk. They talk the talk. They know the Constitution. They can arrest you. They can haul you in, whatever they need to do. Then they take off their clothes, go back to plumbing.
Yeah, if people, that's an idea. If people in the county want to do that, there's all kinds of creative things. And let me bring this back, you know. That's why it's so important that we have national communications, okay? You know, we've got the Committee of Safety, and there's been a little bit of resistance about trying to get the national level on this. But that's where these people got to come and talk, you know, committees of correspondence from each one of these committees of safety, and they hear something like you just said and say, whoa, that's a great idea. I'm going to bring that idea back to my committee in my county, and maybe we could work with the local counties around, and we could do the same thing. You see how that can grow? That's why, you know, bear in mind, committee men, which is where we're heading to, committees of safety must morph into committee men at some point in time once we can gain back the power and take it. But remember, they have national conventions for national purposes. They have state conventions for state purposes. And even on the national level, it should be more than just the election. It should be sharing ideas that's working in your counties that other people might want to pick up and do the same. And so, you know, communications and organization is key. The problem with a national thing is that someone can take it over, but not the way we're structuring. And certainly no one from National Liberty Alliance is here to really facilitate that purpose. And National Liberty Alliance will never come in to participate in those meetings. I may go sit and listen in, but I'm not going to participate in those meetings at that point when they get to that level of conversation. My purpose of communicating in those meetings is only to educate. And if we can't get the people to do the education, then I'm going to have to do an extra job. But I don't want to do that job because I haven't got the time. And so we have qualified people, and I think we're going to be able to work things out, and they're going to do the job and get it done. But when that comes to that level, the people that are in that meeting and the people that are really making the voices are the people who are sitting on committees of safety or become committee men or representing their county in that meeting for the purpose of sharing what they're doing, hearing what others are doing, and taking that information back to their committees, consider doing those things themselves to make life and things better for them, and also to come together when they need as an alliance, okay? You know your friends, you know who's who and who you can count on and make the call, and one county can back up another county and all kinds of things. This is what it's all about. This is we the people. Taking care of business ourselves.
John, you asked me if I wanted to chair an investigative committee, and I hesitated on that. Well, okay, I'll do it, but I want one other committee too.
Yeah.
I want to form a group of people that write a letter to DeVos, the director of the education under Trump. I want to submit something to that lady that is perfectly legal and reasonable about educating from from grammar school, kindergarten, through the 12th grade, where the kids learn the common law, the Bill of Rights. They learn how to defend themselves in a courtroom. They learn what the Bar Association is. They learn who the people that wrote the Constitution are. And we get away from this damn Sharia law and outlaw it.
Well, look, at all law, we don't have to outlaw it. We have to enforce the law, and all law ultimately is outlawed except the court of, you know, except law, which means common law, and equity, which means ultimately law that is still common law, the judges that operate under American jurisprudence. You know, you do, look at, if you can investigate and get necessary information in order to, and get a couple of people to work with you on that, and really get an understanding of the structure of what we're up against and what we're looking to do, and you kind of frame out some kind of paperwork, you know, I can assist you in the writing of that, and we can exercise and execute that and send it in and push it. I wouldn't hesitate from doing that, but I will tell you at some point, hopefully we won't need to rely on that, because really the bottom line, although right now we need to do something, so let's do it. But at some point in time, they don't, it's not their job to be dealing with education in my town, in my county, in my state. They need to stay away. This is the job of the people who live in those communities to come into the school and decide what they want. And there's certain criteria should be set up for them. Look, subject matter is necessary. They need to learn math. They need to learn, you know, writing. They need to learn history. They need to learn certain things. Well, parents need to choose the books. The proper textbooks. They need to decide
what they want to learn. Just a minute. I got to interrupt you, because in our constitutional course, there's one little provision there that says that in the event that the people don't know it, it's our duty to teach it to them, and the only way you can do that is through the schools, and it's got to be a federal mandate. That's why I brought it up. This is what we need to stick down their throats, is teach this. Give our students what they need to know. And after they learn law, then they can understand one and one is two and how do we pay the military.
Look, that should be part of the required education, okay? Civics and Constitution, it's all in history. And, well, it's separate from history, but it's history too. But look, I'm in the process of, and I haven't made contact with these people yet, but I want to talk to these people about working on textbooks. And we need to get ahead of this thing so that we can offer a really good education in civics for different levels and a good education in the Constitution at different levels. And ultimately, those two belong together anyway, but however you want to put it. But we need to teach them. They need to learn about the committeemen. They need to learn what the process, how did the committee, the history of the committeemen, how they became committeemen, who came up with this idea, how it worked to build a nation, what the committeemen were expected to do. And the fact that they need to be taught constantly throughout their education that it is their duty to return back things to their community. It is their duty at some point in time in their life to come and spend 2 years as a committeeman. That's all is required. 1-2 years,
John,
and there's not a lot of time involved in that. It's not going to hurt your job or anything, you know?
John, in the library...
We're up to 25 minutes now.
John, in the Library of Congress... There are going to be school primers, especially for West Point and Annapolis, that teach all this stuff in the early military days. That's where I think I would look for the books. I yield. I'm out.
All right. Thanks, Fred. Yeah, we'll take a look at that, and we do want to make sure we get a good education. Now, that's the key. So we want to get an early start on that and start getting something together. So thanks, Fred. We'll take our next caller.
Shit.
Okay, 860. Can you give us your first name and your state? 860. Last number is 4330. First name and state. You've been unmuted. 860, going once. Area code 860. Going twice. Area code 860. Okay. I guess they'll have to get back into the queue. They must have walked away. Area code 703. You've been unmuted. Give us your first name and your state.
Linda in Virginia.
Linda from Virginia. How you doing?
Okay. Well, I was not going to call in, but you said something that caught my attention. So, or someone did. And this, I guess, hear me out first, because I think it was either last Monday or the Monday before, you had said something about someone asked a question about the government being hijacked and is now a corporation in the 1700s, I think, or something like that.
That was done in 1871.
And you said
it was called the Organic Act.
That absolutely didn't happen in all this. And, okay, so tonight somebody mentioned the Kaffirs. I think it was you. I'm not sure.
The Kaffirs.
Yeah. So in my research, you know, I had been searching around and found the information that was put out there about the government now being a corporation. And, you know, if you don't believe it, then go look at the Kaffirs. And I actually did. And they gave the example of one state, and it lists all the corporations that you know, they have stock in, and that those corporations, you know, kind of dictate to them what they do. And so there was something else to it. I can't remember now. But anyway.
Well, did you have a question on it? Or?
Well, I guess what's the truth to all that? I mean, it seems to me
The truth is simple. Okay? The truth is extremely, extremely simple. And here's the bottom line. The whole thing is a fraud. Everything they do is unlawful. And in order for them to get to the point where they are doing what they're doing, they move little by little. They change, they make statutes. They get people to believe those statutes. They put another statute. Let me tell you, a lot of these statutes, this whole process since the 1800s, since 1871, which is really where most of it began, and I'm sure there were things before. As a matter of fact, there were problems already in the very first decision of the United States Supreme Court in 1789, when they in a court case called the Judiciary Act of 17, not a court case, I'm sorry, it was a legislative act, and it was the Judiciary Act of 1789. That was like one of the first things that Congress did. And then in 1871, they had what's called the Organic Act. Okay, it's the Organic Act of 1871, and that's when they formed a state inside of a city inside of a city. Okay, that's Washington, D.C. And in that process, they created the corporate structure. Then they've worked over the years very slowly. Now, all of this stuff, I think, since 1781, in my opinion, okay, was already being worked on. I'm sure by the time we came outside the century, they already knew exactly what they wanted to put in place. But they knew it had to take time. So this is a conspiracy. And this is worked by people, you know, there was no deep state then, but it was the people who had the control of the money and therefore the control of the political figures, all of the people in politics. And they had a lot of power and a lot of authority. Committees were already operating as Gestapos. You know, the committee didn't call it in, it didn't call it in. If the committee chairman said the vote is yay, when clearly it was nay, it was done. And they got away with it, okay? And they didn't care whether it wasn't executed at the time or people did. All they were cared about was getting it onto the books. They were building what's called a statutory prison for us, and it's gone on. The whole thing is a fraud. It's against nature. It's against the people. Clearly, it's against the Constitution. Now, when this nation was created, we're a very unique creation. We are the very first nation. Well, we're the second nation. Israel was the first. We are the very first nation in modern times to actually construct a government the way we construct it. We called upon God, and we made a covenant with God. That's called the Declaration of Independence. If you read it very carefully, it talks about nature's God asks for his blessings and to live under his law. And that's the first part of the creation of the United States. Then we formed the Constitution. And if you read the Constitution very carefully, you know, there is a set of principles and a requirement, and the whole thing focuses in on the blessings of liberty. It's found in the preamble of the Constitution. And let me just read that. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, they had a union, but it wasn't, even today it's not perfect, but we formed a more perfect union. A union through the Constitution and a Bill of Rights, a more perfect union. For what purposes? To form a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and justice is common law, brings us to the law of God, brings us right to the Bible, whether people want to hear it or not, that's where it goes. It's nature's God, right back to the beginning. We're under the law, okay, of God. Ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote for the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. So we are under the blessings of liberty. And it was very important that we got the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was done in 1791. Most of the states, those becoming states anyway, you know, most of the states would not sign in unless a Bill of Rights was added. They were convinced ultimately by Thomas Jefferson, who was working the background, especially in the Anti-Federalist Papers. But, he was the one pushing for the Bill of Rights. And they did come up with the Bill of Rights. It's a great paper. It's so short. It's really unbelievable. And yet it protects us from so much. They can't write a law or do anything that violates the blessings of liberty, which is our unalienable rights. You can't violate the Bill of Rights. You see, anything done from that point forward to take us away from that is assault not only against the United States and we the people, it's assault against God, ultimately. And we've always trusted that God would judge and protect us. And ultimately, if we look what's going on, it's kind of surprising, but not necessarily so much to me, because I've read the Bible, and there is some stuff in the Bible that kind of looks towards the end of the world, and there's going to be a judgment of nations before there's a judgment of people. And I think we're seeing that, okay? You know, not only what Trump is doing is going to bring these people under judgment, this is international. It's going to free the whole world. We're all under the stranglehold of these crazy 200 or so families that think that they own the world and that we have to pay something to them, and they worship Satan, and they're just sick people, total control. All the wars that we fought, World War One, they started. It was the whole purpose of World War One was to change the way people's lifestyle work and to change things politically. World War Two was the same way, okay, and then all these other little wars since. Nothing but their political wars. They cause problems. And they made changes in the people. And the idea was to bring the United States to a certain way and bring Russia to a certain position where these two societies can work reasonably well together, because they want to create this one world order. Okay?
Right.
And they're the ones exactly. They're the ones that caused the problem in Russia back in the turn of the century. They're the ones that brought in Marxism. They're the ones that have created all these problems. So now we are, what they've done was subversion. It's illegal. It's fraud. And every time, you see, this is the key here. To have a little bit of this knowledge is good. You don't need a lot. You just need enough to know enough that this is fraud. And when you go into a court, you're walking into a court that they try to say is an Article I court. Some people try to say that. I don't know what the judges say. But you're walking into a court that is an administrative court. It is no longer an Article III court. It's no longer operating under the Constitution. But when you go in there and you bring that strong language and lay it out, they get nervous, because they can rest in their pool of deception and work with all of these unconstitutional statutes. But once you lay it out in their courtroom and they won't bring things up, because especially if they realize, they see what you're doing, you know, there's certain things they're just not going to bring up, because you're going to come up and battle that too. But the bottom line is a federal judge always wants a place to hang his hat. In other words, he's got to feel comfortable that he's not going to be held responsible. Now, that's not true with all of them, okay? You take these judges out west that were trying these courts in Oregon and out in Nevada. Boy, those judges, they just didn't care what they did. I mean, there was something heavy holding up. They were probably pedophiles themselves, and they were told, you make guilty pleas, you better make this work, or we're going to destroy you. I don't know what happened, but they seemed as if they were frightened, and they didn't care what it looked like. They just wanted to get the conviction, and they didn't get it. But in any event, that's how you win. They won out there without realizing it, but they pulled together, okay? They made enough noise, enough things were said, the jury's always going on, and it was enough to get the case to really be done right as far as a verdict coming in, or a lack thereof, shall I say, where they had to let the whole case go. And so it can work. It can work in the federal courts much easier than the lower courts, because they're more careful about how they do things. They have to be able to step back and say, I'm only following that statute. They didn't, you know, I can't do anything more than respond to what's said in this courtroom. And these people made those positions, and those people were unable to, they didn't make a position against it. I had to rule for it. I didn't have a choice. It's a statute. You see, that's where they sit. But you got to show that those statutes hold no power or authority, and now you've just taken a place for them to sit away, and you've put back the Constitution into that court, because it originally was created as an Article III court. Now they've been moved over to a whole new jurisdiction. And if you talk to any lawyer that fights in the federal courts, they will tell you that it's a very difficult place to fight a court case, because jurisdictions move from moment to moment, okay, in that courtroom. Whatever all that means, I kind of understand that. But you see, when I go into a court, in a federal court, there's only one jurisdiction. I maintain it, and they can't move it. And especially, you see, that's why you have to, you know, you have to really control the conversation in the court. You have to be the plaintiff. You have to move the court first. That's a very, you can win as a defendant, but it's very, very hard. So you have to control the conversation. If you control the conversation, you can't lose control. You just don't allow yourself to lose it. You can hold on to it. Narrative. If you control the narrative of the court, you can win the court as long as you bring it to where it belongs.
So I'm not really off base, and I often refer to the corporation government, and I'm not off base with that. Then.
Well, no, because they have that statutory setup, which is all unlawful, and they're going to burn for it. They're going to burn for it. They're going to lose all that money, that CAFA money, which went a lot of it is poured into their personal, retirement accounts and extra monies for that. A lot of it ends up into the pockets of judges. Okay, it goes all over the place. And a lot of it goes back to, of course, the Federal Reserve. Everybody gets a piece of the pie, and they're all into it. They're all acting, operating. It's RICO. All of that is just nothing but RICO. That's the word for it, RICO. And you see, we know it. We call it for what it is. And that's why we did, the very first thing we did was a quo vanto, which deals with exactly that, okay, which means we have now the power and the authority to freeze. We have now the power at this moment as we speak. Right now, we have in our hands, the grand jury has in their hands the power to seize all the capital funds across the nation. Now, of course, we don't really have the power to do it, but we have the authority to do it. So let me rephrase that. So that possibility could happen at some point in time, but we have to get our feet into the court, and once we get into the court, then we could exercise those things and bring the money back to the people.
And RICO is basically an organized crime and extortion.
Right. Organized crime, okay. And that's exactly what they set up starting in 1871.
All right, and let me say something else. You know, my code enforcement case, and I started doing all this research, and...
We're going to try to make it a little quick, because we do want to take more people,
okay.
Two more people.
Well, this is what I want to say.
We'll talk a little bit.
The globalists, I mean, people would say that, you know, to fight against the global agenda or the I was going to bring up the UN giving the money to the local governments for sustainable development and basically rendering the local governments powerless, you know. And I'm wondering if, because that's what was happening, and then once they accepted the money from the United Nations, they were then mandated to do their bidding.
Null and void. Null and void. Only the federal government has the ability to negotiate those kind of things with.
No, that was happening. That was happening.
I know. And that's how it's going to be defeated. It's what do you call it?
It's actually still happening. It's still happening.
It's going to be defeated. Trump.
I thought that Trump could have put a stop to a lot of it, but apparently it's still going on. Like Governor Cuomo in New York.
It's agenda 21. Look, what you have to realize is this: you have to look at the nation as a speeding locomotive, okay? And all of a sudden, something's on the tracks up ahead. And you hit the brakes. It takes maybe it depends on how much is behind you. Okay, depends. And there's a lot behind us. You know, it's like a ship on the ocean, a huge ship in the ocean trying to hit the brakes, and it reaches their horizon almost before they finally stop.
Yeah,
see, that's the same thing with a huge train. That's the nation.
Conversely, whenever movements get started, they start slowly and become an avalanche. You know, like the constitutionalists. You know, but anyway.
Well, look,
so I'm wondering.
Let me make one other note. We have two judges in our case. Okay, one is silent. The other one has just walked in and took the hammer and tried to close our case down and tried to tell us to stop sending papers. And we ignored him and we indicted him and we gave enough information for the clerks to understand they better file. They're filing our papers. We're continuing business as usual. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now they did that, and this other one that's silent, and I'm sure they have a spy that comes in or they listen to our recordings. It doesn't matter. So they know. We'll let them know what we're doing. But the bottom line is this, is that I think that they're really concerned now. And I think they realize, you know, they didn't get the memo early enough to realize they don't have the protection they used to have because that's being taken out. Okay, that's what the deep state, you know, the draining the swamp is all about. They're not going to be able to protect each other no more. So these people are really worried, and they better be worried because the moment that protection is completely done, we're coming out together. And there's no place
This is what I'm wondering. So that all rendered our local governments powerless, basically. And I'm wondering if the same thing isn't happening to the courts, that they are there, because, you know, this sustainable development thing is actually changing government processes and everything. And do the courts just look at that and say, you know, what can we do, you know? We have to, you know, they're caught between the Constitution and this global agenda thing. And
yeah, but look at what their plan is. It's not.
I'm not saying they're off the hook or anything. But you know, and there's a lot of
the end. You're seeing the end of the momentum. It's still, again, like I said, the train's trying to stop, and that's what's happened. They haven't got the memo yet. They haven't been knocked in the head. Whoa, the whole world has changed now. Reality is the way one perceives it, and perception is changing. We're going back to the common law. Hopefully that's the perception. And, you know, right now with what Trump is doing, he'll be able to stop it, I believe, and I know he knows about it, and I'm sure he's working on these things, and he will stomp it out. But that's really our job. We should stomp it out. But even if he stomps it out, okay, at some point, you know, look, Satan's going to raise his ugly head again. It's going to happen again in the future unless the people step up and take control and live under the common law, okay?
And that's acknowledging
the king.
The other thing is people say with this global agenda, it's the one money, the one religion or whatever, and I say no, it's the law. you know, because we are the only ones with the American rule of law, and we're the few that have the common law. So in order for them to get to one, you know, their one world power or something, they would have to have one law. And that's the problem. That's the real problem. And that's why we see so much on Sharia law and all that stuff.
Right. But look, I think if America finally gets free from the tentacles of this evil body that has seized hold over it, and this has started way back even when the Constitution was being debated, the enemy was already in the camp and working. So, but if we can finally get rid of this creature, this beast in the swamp, okay, it's not just here. Trump knows, and we all know, we have to defeat it around the world. And when we defeat that, it's going to release all these nations that have been under the thumb of these people. And they're going to be so glad to be out. It's going to be a relief from that. And America will be a credit for that, you know, particularly Trump will be a credit for that. And the people will be accredited for that, especially if we move to the common law and get things done, which needs to be done. And you see, when a good thing works, it's just like the committee man I was talking about. You know, Fred brought up this great idea, and so you exercise in one county, and one county shares it with another county, and wow, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that too. Same thing is going to happen worldwide. Look, our founding fathers laid it out, you know. Don't get involved in foreign entanglement. Stay away. Be friends to everyone. Do business, okay? And that's what draws others close to you, because that's what people really want. That really is the nature of people to some degree, to a huge degree, as a matter of fact. And so nations will become more friendly. They'll will be able to work things out. And I think there'll a lot of the nations which already have tried to adopt the common law, but they really have it all confused. But if they can get it straight, then they adopt the common law. That's great. And it just brings everybody closer, because it's all about ultimately about peace and do no harm.
Well, when I woke up,
to the next caller, because we only got a few minutes, so I'll give you a quick minute to finish.
Okay. Well, when I woke up and I started searching around and saw all this suffering and tyranny that was happening to people, you know, I realized that the only answer was to get back to our basic principles, you know, which made this country great. But here's the problem, you know, and then how do you reconcile that with, unless we all were going to do away with our computers and our cell phones now, we're on this path to, it basically takes you to socialism, because the power of a computer is standardization, and that brings you
right.
to one government, one law, one finance, one money, one everything, one religion.
Well, let me try to give a quick thing. First of all, there's not going to be one religion if you get rid of the monster, so to speak, you know, get rid of the beast. And there's not going to be – well, it would be a good thing to have just one money. You know, I know if the United States moves into only but gold and silver – we're not going to take any funny money. Go take your funny money, turn it into gold and silver, and we'll take it then. You know, so it'll force a one-world government under true money, money that can't be inflated, which is gold and silver. Okay? Now, but let's lay all that aside. We have a problem. We do have a problem. We have a moral problem. We've been demoralized. The answer and the solution is to become moral. God's not going to bless a demoralized nation. And really, it's not necessarily the whole nation that God is looking at in order to bless. Really, it's his people. So the people who have a relationship with him, if they wake up and start doing the right thing, bend the knee and ask and pray for, you know, whatever, to be protected and to be saved from this, you know, may very well be. I think it's in his plan, to be honest with you. But maybe in his plan also, as soon as he judges the nations, which I believe is going to be done in courts of justice, if that's the way it works. But if that's the case, at some point he's going to judge the world, every individual. But look, the key thing is this: educating the children, Okay, that's the key thing. If you can, if we can educate our children, bring morality into the schools, no one will argue with that except for a few crazies, and who cares? Ignore them. But bring morality back into the school. Look,
that's one of the thoughts I had.
A kid comes into the school with his phone, shut it off. You get caught once, you'll get one warning. Second time, maybe three. If you want to go with the 3-year out deal, that's fine. The phone, you come into school in the morning, put your phone on my desk, and we'll drop it off in the office. On the way out, you can get it. You don't turn that thing on in here. That's a major problem in the school. And these kids share a lot of this crap because they play their phones in the school. One kid picks it up with another. So all the crap on the Internet, you know, that's the problem. That may help. Okay, that may help. But the other thing is training them up on the way they should walk. You know, there's a promise in the Bible, train up your child on the way he or she should walk, and they will not depart. That's a promise. It's not a statement. It's not a maybe. He says they will not depart from it. So he has created our hearts and minds to, you know, do that. If you're brought up in an immoral house, then you're going to be brought up immorally usually. And changes in life could happen, but generally speaking. And so but the rule of thumb is train up a child. So let us train up the children the way they should be. If we can get the schools to do the right thing, bring the right curriculum into the schools, and really teach children to think, we wouldn't need more than 8 or 9 grades to begin with. And any further education after that would be focusing in on becoming a doctor or some kind of a technician, a specialty. It might be 1 year, maybe 2 years, maybe 4 years of education, whatever it is, I don't know. But the thing is, we should be able to train our children up to what we have as a college education by the time they get through 9 grades. I know we can do it because I've seen schools. My son went to a school in 3rd grade. He was reading 8th grade level and knew more than any kids in the 8th grade, you know, and extended his education after that, homeschooling. But the thing is it's all possible, okay? So what do we have to do? You know, do the right thing, and the nation will be blessed. And we don't need everyone to follow. You know, I think it was Benjamin Franklin that might have been said this. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it was him, where he said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. That's what we have. And very few people really participate in the nuts and bolts of what this, you know, what things are going on, whether it be in the judicial process or the political process, the economic realm, any of that stuff. Very few people participate with that. But, you know,
that was the other aspect of it, was I didn't want my kids to inherit this, you know, state of corruption. And, you know, it's kind of like that trial out west where they say it matters how you stand, you know, in this. It kind of matters how we get there, and I just...
All right, well, I got to move on to the next caller. We only got a few minutes left, but, you know, you can pick this up next week or any other time you want, so, you know, we're here every Monday, right? But I do want to catch... We got one other caller left, and I want to get them before we get closed down, all right?
All right.
I appreciate the call. A lot of good conversation, and...
It was a good night between you and John, you and Crystal and Jan and Terry. Very, very good.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to our last caller. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate it. Let's go to our last caller, Eric, it looks like. What state are you in? Is that your name, Eric? Last caller on the VoIP dialer.
Probably Georgia.
Yeah, it's Georgia. Eric. Yeah, it's Eric.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
Good.
Eric, what do you got?
Yeah, you know me. The Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9.
Yep.
I thought that fell. I was hoping to get a little more out of it. Now, I appreciate what you're saying, and I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Well, let's look at the key is in the language. That's where the key is at. Okay? The key thing is this. Okay?
To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. So what's
that's
it for?
The key, inferior to the Supreme Court. And you go back into Article 3, Section 1, very beginning, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts, as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Now Congress needs to be given that authority, and it's given in Article 1 where they get their authority, Section 8. They cannot operate outside of Section 8. They have no power or authority outside of Section 8. So they put into Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9, that one sentence, short sentence, Congress shall have the power to constitute judges and courts inferior to the Supreme Court. That's the Article 3 court.
So what you're saying is even though this Article 1 comes first, you're saying the Article 3, they knew what was coming because they took 2 years to lay it all out.
They probably came up with the judicial side first and then said, wait, we got to go to Article 1 and give them the power to do it now. We've got to put it in Section 8 because that's where their authority is laid out, you see? So it's a thought that came later. And there are other things. Well, what are we going to do about this? Well, we got to give Congress power in that. Let's go back and give them. You see, you get into the Federalist Papers and you get kind of the debate in there and the Anti-Federalist Papers, and you'll see all of this stuff is discussed. And finally, when all the day is said and done, now it's time to hammer out exactly. You know, it's been hammered out as it goes, but now it's time to clean it up and finish it off and finally get that document out, and it's done, and it's called the Constitution. But you can't give power to the Supreme Court, let's say, in Article 3, Section 1, and say it shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in other such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish, and not go back to Section 1, Article 1, and give the Congress power to create these courts. These are the federal courts we have. The language is clear.
I see what you're saying. So they have to have that in Article 1 to be able to do it in the first place
And also judicial power of the United States. Okay, right there. The judicial power of the United States is only given to that one court. Actually, and remember, the Supreme Court and the federal courts are really one court. They're inferior courts, but they answer to the Supreme Court ultimately. Okay? But the thing is that that's the judicial power of the United States. There is no other judicial power outside of that Article 3. And it's only been given to two courts. And it's only been given to operate under equity and law. Law being the common law, equity being ultimately the common law also, as versed and understood and exercised through two things. Number one, American jurisprudence. Number two, obvious, what is just? What is just? You know, because now you're looking at the facts. What is just? So that's what should be driving that court.
Right.
Same thing that drives the court that's run by a king's bench. The king's bench being the trial jury.
Right. And so I've read the Anti-Federalist, and maybe I need to read the Federalist because I haven't read the Federalist. But the
Federalist Papers much more, you know, really. The Federalist Papers deal with every single point inside the Constitution. It's the actual debate of the Constitution. Remember, the Anti-Federalist Papers came out later. And Anti-Federalist Papers really, I think, was a strong encouragement for the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights surfaced, the conversation of the Bill of Rights did surface inside the debates in the Federalist Papers. But it never went anywhere, and it wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't being written up. A Bill of Rights wasn't put together. They talked about it, but it seemed to be, you know, like squashed or just ignored. Okay? And that's what drove the Federalist Papers, I believe, is what drove the Federalist Papers. And behind that argument in the Federalist Papers was Jefferson. He just wasn't here to be able to deal with it. I forget exactly. I think he was overseas. I don't remember. But he wasn't here to be able to push for it. But he was writing letters, and he was pushing the certain issues. His big concern was the Bill of Rights, and the people behind the Anti-Federalist Papers was about the Bill of Rights. They weren't against a federal government, but they were against a government that had any power or authority over the states. And the way they corrected it and solved the problem is genius. It ended up in the Bill of Rights. because all of the ways that this country could have been destroyed, okay, would have been reading some things in the Constitution without the insight of the Bill of Rights. You see, the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights. So therefore, Congress shall make no law concerning what, you know? You know, you got the First Amendment, you got the Second Amendment, particularly focuses in, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of protection, to be able to protect yourself, to bear arms, and so on and so forth. You know, there's no such thing as a free state without, you know, the people being able to defend that. You have to have a militia, and it says so in the Second Amendment. That the free state requires for that purpose a militia, without which you cannot have a free state. In other words, the people have to have the arms and the people protect themselves. You know, New York State Constitution, it requires every able body. Doesn't require a certain age, doesn't say male or female, doesn't say adult or child. Every able person. Some children, of course, are not able, so too young, you're not able. Even, you know, 10 or 12, not able. But every able body, okay, person, he uses the word person, I believe, every able person in New York State must defend New York State. That's in the New York Constitution. And if we're going to defend the state and the borders of New York State, obviously we have to be armed. And of course,
yeah, and that's the answer. That's the answer to some of Fred's things, by the way, is the militia. A lot of the stuff that came up tonight, the militia can take care of all of that.
The militia should be tightly connected with the committees of safety, which is the committee men, so the knowledge of the people, relation to the people, should be tightly connected with the administrations and the court. We intend on making this happen. And it also should be very tightly connected with the sheriff. And the sheriff knows exactly who's got a weapon in that nation, that knows, in that county of his, that maybe has experience in the military, ex-police, or whatever the case may be. Hunter got lots of experience handling a weapon. He knows exactly who to call at that point, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Although he can call anyone.
And Jefferson was overseas, I think, in France. He had replaced Franklin as the ambassador.
Something.
And he fired off a letter, or many letters, and sent books to James Madison. And one letter,
Madison was the one on the Anti-Federalist. Yep.
And it was amazing. In one letter, I think that he sent to Madison, he had five of the final 10 First Amendments in one letter. He said, "You got to make sure you get this, and you got to make sure you get that." And
he was his protege. Yep.
Yeah, and it's amazing if you think about how many. There were like 121, and they boiled it down to 12, and then finally they had the first 10 amendments. But still, to play devil's advocate, what they're going to say, I'm sure what they do say, is to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. That's the same power that's given in Article 3. So that's their argument. You see what I'm saying? That's their argument.
Yeah, but the judicial power, Congress cannot create a court that hasn't been given judicial power, can it? It could create all the courts it wants, but it has no judicial power, does it? Unless it's given to them in Article 3.
Unless it's given by the judiciary from Article 3,
right.
Is what you're saying.
It's given by the people to the judiciary to vest them. You know, let's read the language again. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested. Okay, vested. That means we're giving them sovereign in that area. They're sovereign in that area. Okay, shall be vested.
In one Supreme Court. Okay.
So the Supreme Court is sovereign. Okay, and remember, it's a clipped sovereign. Their power and authority is written right in here. You're sovereign as long as you stay within equity. And equity focuses in ultimately common law, which brings us to American jurisprudence, and law. That's where you're vested. Okay. You can't go outside that. You can't create anything more. You can't control anything any more than that. So the power is vested in one Supreme Court. In other words, whatever these lower courts say, we can overturn, we can squash, we can do whatever, we can say no, whatever, or we can allow it to go by. That's their power. And in such inferior courts, Okay? So we've invested them through the Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So we've given Congress the power. Again, we've given them sovereignty. So to be sovereign here, to ordain and establish, is a king, what a king does. So we've given them some kingly abilities, but only in a place that we have kind of, you know, cut out and said, this is where your powers that you can act. You can't go outside this, because once you step outside this, you're under the color of law, and we're going to come get you. But in any event, if you're very careful with the language, judicial power is given in Article 3, and it's only given to two courts, the Supreme Court and the inferior courts. Then the power to create those courts with the same language is used in Article 1. It says very clearly, Congress shall have the power to constitute tribunals, that's judges and courts, inferior to the Supreme Court. That refers right back to that article. Now, they don't have, if they create a court that's not inferior to the Supreme Court, okay, that's the key. If it's not inferior to the Supreme, if it's inferior to the Supreme Court, it's acting under law and equity. If it's not inferior to the Supreme Court, it's no court at all, because we never gave them power to create a court that's not under the auspices of the Supreme Court. You see, it just locks up so tight you can't move it. It can't be moved.
Oh, okay. So I think the part I missed is that they're saying that they have equal power to the judiciary. Is that what they're trying to claim?
Well, they're trying to create courts that are not Article III courts. In other words, not operating under law and equity. And they think they can operate, for instance, maritime law and all this other stuff under the federal district courts on the land. Now, they can only exercise that stuff for whatever's going on at sea. They can judge those issues, okay? But they cannot judge under maritime law or here in on the land. That doesn't come to play. What they have done is created administrative courts, and I'm going to say it again, and this is very, very important to understand. You know, lawyers that I've talked to, only a couple, that have said that, matter of fact, my teacher that taught me, you know, said that when you go into the federal courts, it's very difficult to navigate around the federal courts, because you can be in a court case, and jurisdictions can move and change right in front of you, and you're in a different jurisdiction. You need to be dealing with that and focusing and arguing those points, okay? So they change very quickly. You see, if you're in a court, there's nothing to do with anything else but a court of law, and you've established that's what that court is all about, so therefore it's a court of law under the common law. They can't move from that, and that's where you got to keep your jurisdiction. And you got to be able to realize that they, when one side moves something and says something and it moves over to another jurisdiction and you don't object to that, for instance, bringing in statutes and you don't object to those statutes, okay, you've just allowed the jurisdiction to change and you can lose your case. And that's when people get hurt in the federal courts. And if you'd understand
that.
That
all sounds like priestcraft. But, okay, so where does the trial by jury, the common law?
Exactly, it is. What you just said is exactly what Jefferson said. So you've been reading Jefferson.
Yeah, that's true. Now, so the trial by jury, the common law grand jury, and the trial by jury, the petty jury, where are they in this conversation? I mean, I think I know where they are, but where are they?
Well, what do you mean, whether they're in the courts, the courts of law?
But even according to the Supreme Court cannot overturn. Again, they're
the
bound
Supreme
to
Court,
equity.
Look, the only decisions the Supreme Court can change and stomp upon and do anything in are the equity courts. They have no power or authority over the law courts. None. Zero. The only way they can intervene into a court of law to change any decision or any problem in that court case, there's only one way they could do it, and that's if someone files up against the Supreme Court that their unalienable rights was injured in some way or form in this court case. And if the court looks into it and says, whoa, look, that did happen, they can interfere. But they can't interfere ultimately with the decision of the rest of the court itself, only the injury that was taken place in that court. The Supreme Court has ruled numerous times. We've got some papers right up on our website. We quote all the time that they, you know, that in a court of record, everything is answered. The conclusion is done. It's spoken. It's done. There's nothing else to talk. They can't touch it. It's as if they made the decision for the equity courts and the final word. That's what the people do in a court of law. They've made the final decision. Can't touch it. Can't be overturned. Now, there have been judges that have thrown out the jury's decision. How'd they get away with that? People were sleeping, I guess, that day. I don't know what the hell's going on that they were able to get away with that. I mean, or to try to look at, we've come to the point, and it's been this has been a major problem for a long time, and what's his name spoke about this? Trial by jury, what's his name?
Lysander Spooner. Spooner.
Lysander Spooner spoke about this, okay? And you look at nobody, and others did too. How can a judge make a decision that a court is locked and it's got to be thrown out or something? You know, what do they call it? A hung jury. There's no, in a court of law, no such thing as a hung jury. That's their duty. Go back. You want to be there a month? You want to be playing around down there? Go right ahead. Just come to the damn terms, and because eventually you will, okay? If you're that locked and you can't move, then you got to think about what you got to do. You got to come in with an innocent plea, and that's that. As long as the majority is over it, you got to come in with the innocent plea. But if you got one or two people holding off, well, fine. If I was the judge, you know, and they send a note to me, well, Locke, we can't go anywhere, that's fine. Give him more time. I'll see you next week. We'll talk. And I'll go for a month. I wouldn't care. They're going to come out of there with a decision because that's their duty. They got to figure it out, those people. And if they succumb to the point to say, okay, let's give in to the majority because, go ahead, just give them, acquit them. Get them out. Let's get out of here. Fine. Justice has been served.
Right. And then there's the common law.
By no judge at all.
Right. If the people are unsure, they have to acquit. It's safer to acquit because a common law maxim is that no one escapes the Creator in the end anyway. So
that's
justice
right,
will
yes.
be served eventually.
At the end,
okay, thank you.
All payments will be taken care of. You're right. Everything will be figured out at the end. So,
absolutely.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
I guess that brings us to the end of our program. Good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll see you back next Monday. And again, get involved. Everybody needs to get involved. Get into one of the committees. Help create a committee. We need investigation committees, and I'd like to say an investigation committee particularly might be, we want to investigate this, and we'll send you out for that, and you kind of bring all this information to us, and then once that's done, you know, we'll call you again at another time when we need more things to get information to investigate, like what Fred wants to do here with the education. We need people to investigate, you know, what exactly is going on? How are they making these decisions? Who are these people? Who are our targets that we have to go after? And let's go actually file a case against them, okay? Or do we want to act as a grand jury and tell them something different? So I think we have to file a case to make a battle in the court on that, at least at this side of well, I don't want to say of justice, but at this side of the court, I guess. We get to the other side when we take control, then we'll have courts of justice. We don't have to talk to those people no more because really we've got to bring it back to the states. And the way to do that, another way to do that is to get rid of the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment is already null and void. Null and void. Any state can nullify it at any given time. All they have to do is tell their two senators in their state, don't report for work tomorrow morning because we're replacing you. What do you mean? We're replacing you. Don't go to Washington because we're replacing you. And send two new senators that they elected, which is proper and constitutional, and send them to Washington. And that's how you do it, okay? All the states should just nullify it. Send their senators home and choose the senators that will go in and do the will of the legislators of that state. Just like we the people send our congressmen to go to do the will of we the people in our congressional districts. That's how you do it. But it all requires education. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Okay, good night.